Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Carson City Airport Authority for Wednesday, July the 15th, we're at the Carson City Community Center. May I have a roll call, please?
Chairperson Williams.
Present.
Vice Chair Hutter.
Present.
Member Posick.
Present.
Member Peterson. Member Shirk.
Here.
Member Stotts.
Here.
Member White.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Thank you. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Next, approval of minutes from past meetings. I don't have the copy for the date on the ones we need to approve tonight. I just didn't get the copy, so I didn't have the. I just want to read it correctly. this is the minutes for August. June. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's June, the June minutes of 2011, June 17th. Are there any comments or questions from the board members? We stand in need of a vote for approval. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, if there be any? Seeing none? Oh, okay. I'm sorry. We need a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second. Need a second? We have a motion and a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries. Modification of the agenda. The chairman shall have the right to modify the agenda in order to most effectively process the agenda items. I am going to make two changes in the agenda. Item 5 has been withdrawn from the agenda by the petitioner, so item 5 will not be discussed. And I'm going to move the election of officers at the board member's request down to the position of item 5. So item 1 will now become item 4, item 2, number 1, and so forth. So we will begin with that when we do public hearings. Public comment. Members of the public who wish to address the Airport Authority may speak on agendized or non-agendized matters related to the airport. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chairman to calendar the matter for a future Airport Authority meeting. Any members of the public that wish to speak?
Good evening. Jerry Vaccaro here. I have several.
Excuse me, is there a sign-in sheet up there?
There's no sign-up sheet here.
There will be in a moment. Okay, when it gets there, would you please sign it? That's okay, you can begin.
Okay, I have some questions. I guess during the comments you don't rule on anything, but I think that maybe for the future agenda that maybe we can bring it to your attention. On Title 19 hangar leases, who enforces that? Your legal department?
Could you be a bit more specific?
Yes. It's my understanding that the airport leases are for airplanes and that each hangar has to have an airplane and that the city derives taxes from that personal property, and that's where the revenue for the Airport Authority comes from, that taxation. And according to the FAA grant that you're under their supervision, I believe, you've accepted grant money from them. It's been brought to my attention that each hangar does not have an airplane, and so there's taxes lost to the Airport Authority and to the city of Carson. So I'd like to know who enforces that in the Title 19.
I don't know who actually enforces it.
Well, you have a legal department. Can you give us a legal interpretation?
This is a time for you to make comments. It's not a time for a question and answer.
I'm saying this. But if we're going to calendar something for a future meeting, I have to know that the topic will be brought up at a future meeting.
If you're asking for an item to be put on a future meeting, if you can describe it, then the chairman can decide whether or not to put it on. I'm happy to talk with you after the meeting and answer questions about what goes on in the airport.
Okay. The legality of the lease. Who enforces the legality of the lease?
This is not a question that can be easily answered. We'd need a whole bunch of specifics. I mean, if what Mr. Vaccaro is really asking is who goes around to look and see whether tenants are complying with the terms of the leases, that's generally speaking the airport manager.
Okay, but who enforces it? Is it this board?
Again, Mr. Chairman, I don't think it's appropriate for a question and answer diatribe. This body does not permit itself to be cross-examined. This is an opportunity for him to make comments. I suggest that Mr. Vaccaro be instructed to simply make his comments.
Then let's calendar these things for a future agenda. All right?
We'll be more than happy to. Okay. Just please give us the information you would like on. And
that's item number one.
Mr. Takis would be more than happy to help you with the wording of the agenda.
Sure. That's item number one, the Title 19, possession of the hangar, the authorization of the lease, and the qualifications to get that reduced rent on a lease with having to have an aircraft attached to it. And then total legal fees paid to your law firm, which a member is the Mayor Kroll and yourself, the total legal fees for the past 3 years. And the total FAA money that's been contributed through grants or other sources to the Carson City Airport Authority for the past 3 years. And the length of time for your legal contract and also the engineer contract with Carson City Airport Authority. It was brought to my attention that your selection of members, that this came out in the newspaper, Airport Authority selection, and this was written by Timothy Hahn, and how you made an exception saying because it was a second round that you could pick a wild card rather than an applicant. And I'd like to know what that due process is. And I'd like to address that at a public meeting. And I think if you answer all of those questions, and I will be in touch with you. I don't know if I'll stay for the full meeting, but there'll be a phone number here for you to contact me.
I'd be happy to contact you.
Or I'll contact you. Tell me.
The information, that's right, you can give me your number, I'll give you a call tomorrow. The information that you asked for on legal fees, money from FAA grants,
yes,
that you can get from the airport manager, we have audited financials that should be available to you.
I have those. I just want you to verify. Okay, I have the audits here.
I'm sorry, we can't, I mean, that's the auditors. We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
I mean, I'm happy to give you whatever you need. Airport authorities
are open. The other question I have is what is the length of time that you've been legal advisor to the airport authority? How many years?
I'll have to look it up.
Okay, if you could answer that for me.
Yeah.
Okay. My number's on here. You want to?
That's fine. If you want to just give it to me, I'll promise you I'll call you.
885. 77, 88. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Does anyone else wish to address the authority?
You got it. Okay, thank you. Dayton Murdoch, can I borrow your pen? Thank you for this opportunity to speak. In the airport budget, there's an allowance for legal representation. I was told $70,000. I haven't looked it up. The board needs to send that representation out for quote. There are many legal firms in our area that can perform that function, and there could be a cost savings. In addition, the board should use the district attorney's office for counsel during meetings. There could be a savings. It is my hope the board will agendize this issue, have open discussion. There's an opportunity to make a change for the good at our airport. Thank you very much.
It's okay. Does anyone else wish to address the authority? Seeing none, we will move on to public hearings.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Is there provision to speak twice?
As long as you don't exceed the 3-minute limit.
Right, so
there's another option to speak further down in the agenda.
Okay, I can wait.
Or you can, if it's not going to long item, you go ahead and do it now. I just said if you would like to speak now, as long as it's not long, you can do it.
Round two. First part of June, I applied to be the manufacturer representative for the airport. I'm qualified. I met all the qualifications. The airport attorney gave the Board of Supervisors incorrect information as to the location of my shop. He used my home corporate office instead of my manufacturing facility. So I was not voted on. Also, the board did not ask for public comment. I would have straightened that out. Then I applied again. Second time around, I did an interview, which was a little bit terrifying, just kind of like this moment. And I did well. I was not voted on or not appointed to the position because the airport council gave the Board of Supervisors information that they could, the second time around, choose whoever they wanted. I would have been okay with that had there been other manufacturers present that were trying to get the position. But during the application, there was no mention of second time around we can pick who we want. And I provided all the necessary information to serve on the board. I believe I was robbed of an opportunity to be a volunteer and serve my community. I can only hope the supervisors may change this. If they do, I will happily serve on the board.
Anyone else wish to comment? Seeing none, again, then we'll move on to public hearings. And the first item will be what is listed as item two, discussion and possible action to approve taxi lane naming, map and addressing of buildings on the airport's staff plan for getting addresses and taxi lanes marked consistent with the map, notice for bids for painting addresses, and to seek funding from Carson City Finance. Mr. Schmidt and Mr. Rowe.
About 2 to 3 years ago, it was brought to my attention by the Carson City Fire Department that they were had inquired about doing addressing on the airport. And to my knowledge, I was also told that this happened, was discussed years earlier before I even came in. But in earnest, about 2 years ago, we started meeting with the fire department and with a couple of representatives of the sheriff's department to discuss this, and came up with some ideas. Many of those ideas were rejected, but Douglas County GIS, who was spearheading the design of the addressing system, stepped in and have come up with the design that you see before you on the maps. And we will be putting that on the screen if we can. But Eric Schmidt from Douglas County GIS is here to answer any questions and further explain how they came about the addressing system. Eric?
Good
You got to love technology. I do, or I've been toggling it, but it's not taking. If you'd like, I can go through. You have an illustration, so I can kind of talk you through that, and then if we get this resolved, we can go back through. But at least I can talk you through the process that we've been through. That's acceptable to you all, however you want to handle it.
I'll try that one too.
Try all of them. I can hold this thing up if you want.
You can select that and put it.
Do you want to come sit over here?
Whatever y'all would like for me to do, I'm game to try.
Are there hard copies in the back that we could proceed with rather than trying to do the slides?
Let's try this. Again?
I've got, there's copies in the back, I believe.
I've never received any of this.
Okay,
that's the other side. I'll tell you what, I think we're just going to abandon this item until you figure out if you can get this working, and we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. And if you get up and going again, then we'll get to it at that point. Okay, item three. Discussion and possible action to approve the extension of security services or notice for bids for security services for the next 5 years. Mr. Takis and Mr. Rowe.
I believe this is Mr. Rowe's item.
Okay. Tim?
Okay. The agenda is for a 5-year contract for security services, and I've handed out copies of the old security agreement and the new proposed security agreement by Capital City Patrol and Transit for a new 5-year period. Now, the agreement does not change earlier because of some I thought I was being proactive by increasing the coverage of patrols from 300 per month to 600 per month. But it was brought to my attention that I could not go beyond the agreement. So I reduced it back to $300 per month. This is the new agreement has the $300 per month coverage plus the option to increase to 600 if the authority so chooses. It is my recommendation that Capital City Patrol and Transit be continued and an extension signed by the authority. However, if a notice for new security is to be recommended, then we will notice and go to bid.
Questions from authority members, or Steve, unless you have something
to add? No, I was just going to ask, is there somebody here from Capital City Patrol to support this item?
No, I thought that Virgil Hammond was going to be here, but he couldn't make it tonight.
Then I would just note that the I reviewed the contract, as I stated in my briefing memo. The problem that I see is it says the rate is 300 to 600. It contains no metrics or any way of measuring when it's 300 and when it's 600. So there's really no way to find accountability under this contract or to audit it to figure out should we be billed 300 in a particular month or 600. That's a problem with the contract. And it seems to me that would need to be fixed. I was hoping somebody from the, you know, patrol company would be here so they could maybe respond to that. The old contract was not being followed, and I think it really expired by its own terms because it was a one-year contract, but it was carried forward. The increase from 300 to 600, as Tim mentioned, was not approved by the airport authority. It was something that he decided to do. That's, you know, we've since talked to him and told him you've got to bring, if you're going to change terms in a contract, you've got to bring him back to the authority. NRS 844 gives the authority the ability to contract, and so those kinds of decisions on contracts should always come to you. They shouldn't be done unilaterally by the airport manager or anybody else on the airport. And then I also noted in there that I checked with the city. The city doesn't use a private patrol service. They use the sheriff's office. I don't know what the what problems there would be by asking the sheriff's office to also occasionally patrol. I don't know the frequency of the patrols or whether that's reasonable. Frankly, I don't know any of that information. Maybe Tim can respond to that. And then lastly, I just made a suggestion, and this is just an idea I'm throwing out there because I really don't know much, but we do give a free lease area to the Sheriff's Aero Squadron. I don't know what they do. I know that a long time ago they used to transport prisoners for the Sheriff's Department. I don't know if they still do that. I don't know what they actually do right now for the community, but I threw that out as another potential idea for doing patrolling. So those are my comments. I couldn't come up with the recommended motion because I really didn't know which direction this would take.
Other board members that may have questions for Tim on the contract? Jim, go ahead. Sorry, Morris, I thought it was Jim.
Question for Steve. In your briefing on this, you stated looks like the fourth paragraph, that in 2011, you advised that hiring the security company would not lessen our liability, but increase that liability. Can you give us a rundown on what your opinion was in that regard?
Actually, the issue wasn't so much with just having a security company, but in 2011, this same guy, Virgil Hammond at Capital City Patrol, proposed a much more extensive contract with the Airport Authority. He wanted a contract that was, I think, $48,000 a year, and he was proposing that he would have roving patrols to stop and check IDs of people on the airport, ask people what they were doing there to determine whether they were legitimately on the airport. Those kinds of activities, I think, would create more liability than they would solve. We don't have a problem, for the most part, with non-authorized people in the airport. At least I've never heard, not from this security company or anybody else, that being a common problem. But what I do see is I see that if you bring in a private security group and their behavior is viewed by the tenants as harassment, nothing good can come of that. And so at the time I made that, I responded to that question because the argument was, well, if we have greater security, that means we'll have less liability, and my response was just the opposite. I should also say that at that meeting, the board didn't take action on the item. So they didn't actually reject the contract or the proposal, but they didn't, no one made a motion either, so it didn't go anywhere. So I guess it got defeated by lack of action. But among the comments that were made by board members, Alex Carter, who was then the treasurer, said that there wasn't room in the budget for that kind of proposal, and that there might be room in the budget to increase it from 300 to 600 a month, but that he would not be in favor of it. And that was among the only comments that directly addressed what the board members were thinking about the rate. So candidly, I was very surprised when we were in our budget hearings the other day, and it was revealed that the airport manager unilaterally raised the rate right after that from 300 to 600. So I just bring that up because that was also in that same context of that meeting about what are we going to do with the security contract.
Thank you. Like Steve, I have quite a few issues with what's written into this contract. Since this has been a point of contention for quite some time, and the owner of this company doesn't seem to be able to get here, it would be my preference to simply tell them to cease and desist and remove themselves from the airport. They're not any more reliable than this. Well, I don't think we need them.
And Jim, comment? I'm just going to poll the board. Carl?
I think a little forensics here, maybe in the spirit of patrol and law enforcement. I think that the reason for the from $300 per month to $600 per month couples to the proposal in the first clause to provide one to two private patrol officers. One might assume that if it's one, it's $300 a month, and if it's two, it's $600 a month, that we have no way of knowing that. That would make logical sense. If that's the case, I'd ask the question, where is it spelled out and what is the proposal? Are we proposing that we have one or that we have two patrol officers, and does that mean that they are in two separate beats in two separate cars, or is that two guys riding around together? So I think there's some details about what we're really asking for that need to be understood a little better.
I think it'd probably be my idea to have this go to notice, and let's get some bids. We'll have it clarified by the security companies to give us an honest bid. We'll go with the lowest bidder. And that way we'll alleviate any of these questions.
I'll let the board continue. Steve, any questions that you'd like to ask or comments?
Well, the only thing I was going to say, I've been on the airport 10 years now, and nobody's got anything of mine. So obviously they're out there doing tentatively what they should be doing.
Phil?
Since the airport is a county-city entity, it seems like it's reasonable to expect that the sheriff's department could come around and make the patrol themselves. That would save us some money, which would be good, and they'd be real cops making the patrols. Personally, I've never seen any of these people out there. The time I spent around the airport, I've never seen anybody patrolling the airport. I suspect maybe they're there. I haven't been there at 3 o'clock in the morning. Not exactly the kind of time I like to be out there. So I would think that if we can get the sheriff to do it, that would be the best solution.
Thank you, Phil. I would like to echo Bill's thing. That was going to be my question. Before we go any further, shouldn't we check with the sheriff's department to find out if this is something that, you know, once a night at varying times they could ride around the airport? I see some of them there from time to time anyway. I also spend quite a bit of time at the airport at all kinds of hours, and I've never seen these guys. So I'd like, how do we verify exactly what they're doing? And they're not here now, so we can't ask the questions, but is this the same company where we somehow loaned money to them inadvertently at some point, weren't supposed to, and somehow we loaned them money? Is this the same crew?
It is. We didn't actually loan them money, but what we did was gave them advance for the services at a 5% discount throughout a year. And so it saved the airport some money by doing so, but then they were able to buy a vehicle. However, having said that, about, I think, when we were bringing up the possibility of full-time roving patrol, I had talked to the Carson City Sheriff's Department about doing the same thing. They weren't opposed to it, but it all comes down to time. Do they have the time to do it, or are they out on calls? Usually nighttime is their busy time. But that would be another question, a good question to ask again, to see if we can get that, get some cooperation from the Sheriff's Department to see if they can come out and patrol the airport.
Carl.
Just a quick question for clarity. In reviewing the old contract, the old contract appears to be a one-year contract. Has that been renewing year to year at this point? And at this point, I mean, are we free of any obligations? I mean, are we at a point of natural expiry of this contract, or do we have a contractual obligation to run it out for a certain period of time from here?
There is no obligation to run it out. It is for a one-year contract, and this was, I was new. I didn't know anything better. I just kept them on.
I just asked because the, if I've got the right one, the previous contract, which was for 1 year and I assume has been renewed on a year-to-year basis, had a start of service of October 22nd, 2010. I'm just wondering if we're obligated. Are we talking about this item in preparation for making a choice when that contract period expires around about either 9/21 or 10/22 of this year?
There's no obligation. There's no written contract at this time.
Anything further from the board? Any public comment on this matter?
Yeah. Do they wear a uniform?
Excuse me. Can you come up to the mic, please?
G'day. I'm good. Thank you very much.
And please state your name when you make a comment.
My name is Beverly Ferrato. I own a hangar at the airport. And my question is, do these guys, Tim, wear a uniform, or how do we ever know that they're about the airport?
They do wear uniforms. They have unmarked black police cars, and they carry weapons and tasers and the whole official, response. Mm-hmm. These guys are all retired policemen.
Okay. And from that, it should be obvious that we should have them chair. But I would like to know that in some way we knew who they were around the airport. Thank you.
Any other members of the public that wish to comment? Then we'll bring it back for the board for motion or further discussion.
Well, I would say then that I move to have Tim work with Steve to draft a contract and let it out for bid.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion by members of the board? Carl.
Yes, thanks. A question about Member White's motion. I heard have council draft a contract, then I heard and put it out for bid. Are we talking about putting together a contract for services with Capital City Patrol under the terms outlined more or less clearly here, or are we talking about going out to notice and having a bid process for these services?
I would amend that to say construct a proposal rather than a contract.
If I could just suggest, I'm happy to work with Tim and do that, but I'd feel more comfortable if I could bring it back to you before we actually issue it to make sure we're on the right track. And so what right. we would do is we'd put it together, we'd bring it back to the next meeting, and you can decide if that's the RFP that you want to put out.
Just one comment. Would you accept a modification to the motion that this happen after further discussion with the Sheriff's Department to find out if this is something that Carson City can take on its own rather than pursuing an outside source? After that, if Carson City says no, then obviously we have to go to some other outfit. But would you accept that we proceed, as you suggest, after further discussion with Carson City Sheriffs?
I would accept that friendly amendment.
Okay. We have a motion and a second in motion. Do we have any comment from the public regarding the motion? Seeing none, we're back to the board. We have a motion and a second. Tamar, do you have the motion clearly, or do we need to state anything further? Okay, then, Morris, if you would just say after discussion with the Sheriff's Office, then.
Yeah, I move to have Tim and Steve construct a proposal for security after they explore the option of using the Sheriff's Department.
And that's still seconded, as stated?
Still seconded.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Those opposed, if there be any? The motion carries.
Could I also recommend that you vote? It sounds like you want to not renew the existing contract. My suggestion to you is that somebody make a motion not to renew the contract, and you vote on that. That way, Tim has the ability to go back to Capital City Patrol and tell them their services are not needed at this point, if that's what your intention is.
Jim?
When does the contract expire?
Well, it actually expired about 4 years ago, and so we're actually operating without benefit of a contract.
Actually, 3 years ago. It was entered into in...
It actually expired 3 years ago. It was a one-year contract that was entered into, I think, on September 21 of 2010. So, no, it actually expired 4 years ago. I'm sorry. Almost 4 years ago.
Carl?
It seems like we might not want to operate in an uncovered fashion between now and when we secure the services of the current providers or other providers or the Carson City Sheriff's Department, whenever that happens. Do we have the ability to continue on an kind of an at-will basis?
That's the basis we're on right now, and I'm sure you can. If that's your desire, then no additional motion is necessary at this point.
I think we need some security, but I think we need to understand what security they are providing, because it seems like no one sees them. Maybe we need to have a discussion of what they're providing so they can continue, hopefully, providing some security.
I can tell you that there have been numerous times where I have been called at night by the security guys regarding an aircraft that came in under questionable circumstances, and they would call me, especially when someone was caught trying to cross the airport as a shortcut. This doesn't happen anymore, but this was several years ago. There was an instance where a hole was found drilled in one of the porta hangars, and of course they didn't find anything, but they were there. They normally will do a couple of patrols a night, and yes, in the wee hours of the morning when no one else is there. One of the advantages that we have found with Capital City is that they will check the lights, and they will make patrols around the airport with the lights on, and they will let me know the next day what lights they found out. We do the same thing twice a week on our own, but it is nice that they will tell us. And they have alerted me a couple of times that the rotating beacon was inoperative. So there's advantages to having them. These are not things that are required by them, but they have done that. But most of the time, they have arrested people on property, mostly in the parking lot. They have been very useful for that matter. But like Steve said, we have never had a problem with break-ins of aircraft. We did have a break-in of Sterling Air a few months ago where someone broke in and stole some petty cash. But the security guys didn't happen to be there at that time, which was unfortunate, but that's the way it was. So if the authority directs me to keep this going for a little longer, at the same time, look at the Sheriff's Department, try to work something out, whatever your guidance is what I'll do.
So correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but right now we've been operating on a month-to-month basis, essentially. They submit a bill, we pay a bill, and they're providing the service, but that's being done currently without a contract. And we would be in position to allow that to continue just as it is while we're putting that out for notice, and I assume they would bid like everybody else does at that point. Or do we need to take an action at this point to specifically direct him to inform them that they're operating on a month-to-month basis while this goes out to bid, and then or simply say cease and desist and we'll worry about it ourselves? We kind of have either of those two options.
I can answer part of that question. I can answer the part that the contract that they have with the airport is expired, and so we are now operating on a month-to-month basis. I don't think it's necessary for you to make a motion to inform them that it's on a month-to-month basis. The agreement itself is fairly clear. That was a one-year agreement. I don't think we have any liability if we terminate the agreement at this time. In terms of what are going on in the day-to-day operations, that they give us a bill and we pay it, I don't have any information that Tim would have. And I've never seen these guys, so I don't know. The only time I ever saw these guys were the two times they appeared in front of the airport authority, the original time and then when they proposed the much more expensive contract.
Any other questions or comments on this matter? Does anyone care to move?
My suggestion is, why can't we just table this till the next agenda meeting and let them fly for another 30 days? It's not going to hurt anything, $300.
Other board member comment?
Yeah, I see nothing wrong with just keeping it on a month-to-month basis until we actually have a new contract with somebody, with them or somebody else or the sheriff, and just leave it as it is.
So it's the board's view to just leave things as they are, and the motion that we've taken and voted on is the action we're taking on this item. Okay, that concludes that item. The next item, listed as item number 4, which is now item number 3. Discussion and I'm sorry.
Are you guys?
Well, this isn't going to work, so I'm going to, if it's all right with you, I'll talk you through the handout that you have. Basically, the PowerPoint is nothing more than breaking down what you have in your hand with a little bit of additional text. If that would suit you, I'm happy to go ahead with that.
All right. I think we have other people here for that item, so we'll go ahead with it.
Okay.
So we're going back then to item number 2 on the agenda.
So for the record, my name is Eric Schmidt. I'm the manager for GIS and IT customer service for Douglas County, Nevada. We are under interlocal contract, the GIS service provider for Carson City, and have been for the past 4 years. We're in our 5th year of that contract arrangement. I come to you today in support of Tim and the efforts of Carson City Emergency Management to explain and provide any Q&A that you have. about the hangar readdressing process that we've been going through at the airport. Start off with the purpose and the requirements of this process have been to improve the delivery of emergency services on the airport compound by providing each hangar with its own unique and logical address. This addressing system must be in keeping with the existing addressing system within Carson City and must comply with the existing addressing ordinance now in use and under enforcement within the city. The system must also comply with all pertinent FAA requirements. The program participants, there have been many people at the table for this process, and to name those, we've had the Carson City Airport Manager as a representative of the airport, the Carson City Assessor's Office, they are the addressing authority for the city, Carson City Emergency Management, they are the entity that first raised this as an issue, Carson City 911 Dispatch, who obviously has a major stake in the delivery of those accurate public safety services, Carson City Fire Department, who not only has a station adjacent to the airport, but also has a vested interest in being able to deliver services, especially emergency medical services. I'm in the addressing business for four counties, and whenever we face the thorny issue of addresses, people will say, well, if the fire department needs to find me, there's smoke in the air. The flip side of that coin is that if emergency medical services need to find you, you could be passed out by the door inside your structure and there's no indication. So addresses are absolutely crucial for fire. Same with the Sheriff's Department. They've been involved with this, as has Carson City Public Works, Douglas County GIS, and we've also consulted with the U.S. Postal Service on this issue. The process, to briefly explain, public safety stakeholders recognize the need for a solution to the problem of the current addressing system. The public safety stakeholders and the airport manager approached Douglas County GIS to facilitate a solution. We worked with Carson City's assessor's office to create a naming and addressing system that was in compliance with the existing city ordinance. A tentative system was presented to the airport commission or the airport authority in August of 2013, and recommendations were made of our process at that time. Those recommendations were leveraged into the process, and a new solution has now been provided. Public safety stakeholders and the airport manager have all vetted the solution that we're presenting. So, just to be clear, the Carson City Assessor's Office created what's called an addressing grid, and you overlay an addressing grid over your spatial area to guide you in the assignment of different numeric addresses. This was done in keeping with the existing grid within the city, and I say that to say that the new addresses that we're recommending for the hangars are all in keeping with the existing addresses in the rest of the city. This is a key point because for emergency responders, they are used to an addressing system. And so this system being based off of the same addressing grid that serves the rest of the city and following the same ordinance, so that if they roll up to a bank of T-hangers, it's not unlike rolling up to a strip mall. They understand how that addressing system works. So they're not having to recreate or relearn an entirely unique system just because it's on the airport compound. So if you look through the remaining slides here, basically just walking through the various areas of the airport, down in the terminal area, the terminal building itself retains the 2600 College Parkway address. The other buildings that are accessed from College Parkway are all addressed off of College Parkway. We have the recommendation of legal counsel and the FAA, due to FAA requirements, we've addressed the issue of the taxi lanes. We're very cognizant of the distinction between a taxiway and a taxi lane. The taxiways obviously have to be Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, et cetera. The taxi lanes have to be different, so that we can make the distinction between those two functions. In addressing, you're addressed off of whatever access you make or whatever venue you make access from. So if a hangar is accessed off of what we're recommending is Piper Drive, it's addressed off of Piper Drive. So you may see, I say this to say, you may see adjacent buildings that appear to be addressed off of different taxiways or taxi lanes or streets. That's because of the orientation of those individual hangars. So fire apparatus, an ambulance, fire, or sheriff, they roll up on Piper Road, or they roll up on Perimeter Road, or they roll up on Taxiway Bravo. It's from that taxi lane or that taxiway that they make entrance into that building. That's what determines where that facility is addressed. So as we look up Taxiway Bravo, it's obviously pretty busy up there. What we've determined is that it makes the most sense to name, to recommend the name of Echo Lane for the taxi lane that connects Taxiway Delta to Taxiway Bravo. And then between the different hangar bays, treat those as the city treats alleyways between complexes of, say, apartments or various suites in a shopping center. So the building is numbered, and then we use a suite system inside that. I'll tell you that the U.S. Postal Service is no longer recommending alphanumeric addresses, meaning suite A, suite B. They do not like that because, quite frankly, their barcode reading equipment won't read it. So it's got to be all numeric, which presents some challenges, obviously. So you'll notice that if you look up between Taxiway Bravo and Taxiway Delta, there are a series of what I believe to be T-hanger sets. So you have 2795 Echo Lane, suite number 65, and so on. This, again, I know that this is, I'm kind of drinking from the fire hose on sort of a clinic on addressing, but this is in keeping with the way that the city now addresses shopping centers, apartment complexes, et cetera. So, again, to the emergency responders, this is a very familiar system, which would obviously expedite the delivery of those emergency services. In the northwest corner, There are certain access restrictions. Some of those buildings are accessed off Arrowhead Drive. Some of them are accessed off of what's being recommended as Cessna Lane. Same for the T-hangers off of Taxiway Alpha. And then the other hangers to the east side that are also addressed off of Taxiway Alpha, or would be addressed off of Taxiway Alpha. That's it in a nutshell. I know it's a big nutshell, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. I know this is a confusing subject.
Questions from board members? Carl.
Thanks for, first of all, for the thorough presentation. And, I've always kind of wondered, how do these things get numbered? And now I know a lot more than I did. I certainly endorse the value of what we're talking about here, and I think it's very important that we have the ability to have efficient and effective emergency response. This is smart. My comment is not pertaining to the overall concept, but calling attention to something I think is concerning in the naming as currently presented. Whether or not this is inside or outside of FAA regs on the subject, I'm concerned about the idea of having a NATO alphabet named lane or street. So Cessna, Falcon, Piper, that's great. Having an Echo Lane and a Foxtrot Lane does a couple of things. What happens when we add another taxiway, and that next one would be Taxiway Echo? Now we've got an Echo Lane and a Taxiway Echo. Even in the current moment, as aviators, we are used to, as I think you mentioned, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, et cetera, representing taxiways. And now we have non-aircraft movement, but aircraft and vehicle shared thoroughfares that are non-movement areas of the airport that are having those NATO alphabet names. And I would just recommend that we look at alternate names for those.
That's both very good constructive criticism and very doable, very easy to address. Sorry for the pun.
Just one question. I believe that the one that's called Echo Lane, where they've got it right here now, is actually down on our airport plan as Taxi Lane Echo. Not taxiway, Taxi Lane Echo. I don't know how it got designated that way, but it is actually there, and it is an aircraft movement area. That's the taxi lane that those aircraft use getting out of those hangars and getting to Bravo or to Delta.
And to clarify, when I say non-aircraft movement area, I'm using the term of art. You know, if this were a controlled field, where do you have to be talking to ground? Not to suggest places not where airplanes travel versus not airplanes travel. But if that's the case on our airport map, maybe that's another question to address.
I think when they drew the map the first time I was around when they were doing that, they never envisioned anything past a taxiway Delta, which was the big movement at that time was to try to get one. You're right. We could, if something happens that one of these runways changes or we got a parallel or we moved another, we had maybe a taxiway that went from Charlie to Delta. And, you know, because we're still talking about at some point Charlie may have to be split, then there would be necessary to be a taxi lane or a taxiway that went from Charlie to Delta down both sides of the split. So that is a valid point. One of the other questions, as long as I've got the mic going, I had was that I've noticed in the buildings here, I think I understand what you mean, but for example, the one you call 2720 Echo Lane, happens to be where the row where my hangar exists, and you've got 40-60. I assume that you're talking there's a 40, a 50, and a 60. And does it go north to south or south to north in the numbering? Because at some point the people that own those hangars are going to need to know. I notice over on the first row of hangars, you started numbering them all the way up from taxiway Delta going north, and then partway up you stopped and started saying numbers from 40 to 60 or 70 to 90 or whatever the numbers are in there. So I think that probably needs to be spelled out a little bit more clearly. But one other issue that I have, and maybe some of the members of the public will have as well, since I've been spending a fair amount of time at the airport the last week and a half, I've talked to a few people around there, and nobody knows this is happening. Hardly anybody at the airport is even aware of this, and there are issues to, as a couple of members have pointed out, there are people that don't live here and have stationary addressing these buildings as they're currently addressed, or they have shipping that goes currently to these addresses. I think we need to have a discussion with just the airport tenants. I mean, maybe it's the airport manager calls a meeting and brings everybody in to talk about this and to get into the specifics that these people may have. Because some of this stuff, not that I share Carl's concern, that we don't have a way for someone to be found if they get hurt. And frankly, most of us are in our hangars working by ourselves and could easily get hurt. And if you're not all there and trying to communicate where you are, you know, the bad commercials, I've fallen and I can't get up stuff. So we definitely need it, but I think we at least need to let folks know that they're doing it. I mean, I talked to some folks up at the Sierra Airport. They're completely unaware of it. And I know a couple of those people are, somebody up there actually lives in Canada and ship stuff back and forth down here. So somehow or another, we have to let these folks know and let them start making some sort of other arrangements for when this actually happens. And I'm sure there are other questions that may pop up, so I'll stop talking. And Phil, I'll start down your end.
Yeah, I've got a couple questions. First of all, the way this grid is set up, would it be possible for somebody who looked on a Google Maps to find a hangar?
To discern its address, or just
by using this addressing system, is it likely or possible that Google would be able to incorporate it into their search system for an address?
Well, Google uses third-party address data. There are several different companies out there that provide third-party addressing data. And what those third-party addressing data companies will typically do is a process called address ranging. And what they'll do is they'll take a line of data, of vector data in our world, and they'll break it into sections. So here you have the 100 block, the 200 block, the 300 block, et cetera. So that when you type in 325 Acme Road, it looks at the line that is Acme Road, it finds the 300 block, and then it discerns where 25 would be along that line. They don't use address points typically. Now, for dispatch, we typically use address points. We also use address ranging as a subsequent. So I say this to say they could probably get close, but I would not guarantee you that they would be precise. And that is assuming that they actually take the data that we are willing to provide them. One of the things that we have a real struggle with as a local jurisdiction is getting some of the national and international data resellers and web mapping companies to actually accept the local data, which is ironically the authority. We have people that will regularly call us and say, QVC won't accept my address when I enter it into my computer. You need to change my address to what QVC says. And we're like, no, ma'am, we're not going to do that. You know, the local authority is the local authority. So there's a process to getting the large companies, especially like Google, Bing, MapQuest, and some of the others, even UPS and FedEx, to actually accept our data. It's tough to even get the U.S. Postal Service to accept our data. I don't presume to know what makes them tick, but I've had conversations with them even at national conferences, and some of the larger companies take kind of a, yeah, we'll get to it when we get to it attitude. It's frustrating.
My experience with the post office has indicated to me that the post office is just totally hosed up as far as delivery on this airport. I did an investigation into it last year. I went around to all the different residents and asked them what they thought about the service. And I also wanted to know about those post office boxes that they have out in front. It seemed that every time they changed a delivery guy, nobody knew where the mail was going to end up. I think Tim can tell you that he has ended up being the de facto postmaster out there because when they keep delivering stuff to him because they don't know where else to put it. Now, do you see any hope that the post office will? I mean, you mentioned that they don't seem to be too accepting of your system. But
well, they're accepting of the system. It's just it's getting new data into their existing system, which can take some time and be something of a process. I will say that it would be my expectation that moving to more of a standard U.S. postal address, a fully formed U.S. Postal Service address on the gang boxes would help. We even had some lip service from the Postal Service that they'd be willing to upgrade the gang boxes out there if we moved to more of a standardized addressing system, which would obviously also help. So I think, as you said, you know, when you get a new carrier out there, the current system makes no sense to them. It's unlike anything they've ever seen. So there's certainly a breakdown when somebody leaves and takes that institutional knowledge with them. So moving to a standard system where we're relying on the system, not necessarily the individual's institutional knowledge, is always a plus. So I would think that there would be benefit with the Postal Service.
Okay, moving on to another subject. Have you considered using some of the names of our airport's more illustrious denizens for naming these lanes and such?
That has certainly been tossed around. And I'll be honest with you, from our perspective as the GIS service provider, we will name these taxi lanes at your pleasure.
Maybe I can respond to that one. We did launch down that path, and it turned into a popularity contest. Oh, I think this guy should be on. I think that guy should be on. No, not that guy. He didn't do anything. And it got into a real mess. And so we basically directed them to pick a course that is more personality neutral. In that regard,
They've used a naming convention similar to what I think you did on the Douglas Airport, used names of plane manufacturers. One of the suggestions at the time was maybe that's not such a good idea, because if you have somebody on Piper Road, this is Piper 473 on Piper Road moving to Beechcraft Lane or something like that. After you listen to a couple of those, you may forget what kind of airplane you should be looking for, because the names are all the same. And for that reason, I think one of the suggestions might be just use airplane parts, you know, like Propeller Lane. You know, people don't announce propellers or carburetors or anything like that moving around. That way you would get rid of the personality issue, but you'd also get rid of a potential confusion issue if somebody's trying to figure out who is really taxing where. But as Eric said, those are easy changes for him to make. He just needs the direction from you.
And we're only talking about a half dozen or so of those, yeah, as you all know.
Well, I was thinking, you know, in the Carson Air Group, which I'm involved in, it would be nice if we could just name the lanes. There wouldn't be any acrimony over it. I think if we could name one like Lance Lane. I was thinking of Dory Lane. I think it'd be kind of nice to have her noted, because she'd done a lot of things on the airport, you know, over the years. I don't think that would create a lot of acrimony. But what I see here, these numbers, they look kind of confusing to me, you know, and I may not be the sharpest tool in the shed, but if I were trying to get to a hangar or something by one of these hangars by going by these numbers, it'd be a real head scratcher. I realize that the emergency responders would be able to do it probably in a much more efficient manner than the average person would. And I'm glad you're doing this, because, you know, it'd be nice to have emergency responders when you need them. These numbers, would it be possible in the Carson Air Group just to have a discrete number for each hangar? There's only 38 hangars. Rather than 10 to 30 on 2720 Echo Lane, and then 10 to 40 on 2770 Echo Lane, and then 5 to 35, would it be possible just to have a discrete number for each hangar?
Well, could I comment just for a second on that before we do? I think the idea, Phil, is that the address is either Bravo or Echo, and then there's going to be a suite number, and those are the suite numbers, and they're done is in 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, because that's the way their system works. And rather than, because, yeah, yours is whatever it is, T something, mine is H something, and they all have designated numbers on them, but we're going to lose those. And so my concern is that these numbers all be going in the same direction, north to south. And from what you've got here in this map, you can't tell what you've got. So I think you need to actually either blow this thing up so you can see which numbers are on which building, so that the people who are in them know what they are. And right now they don't.
Well, I'd be glad to provide you either with a better hard copy, or even put it on an internet viewer, like a GIS viewer, that we could provide to the members of the authority, so that you could go and interrogate this a little more. I will tell you that, you know, typical standard, you know, certain numbers typically increase from south to north. They typically increase, I believe, from, I don't want to misstate, from east to west. You also typically have odd numbers on the east and the south, et cetera. Those are pretty standard. In terms of where the numbers actually start, like some of the suites start at 10, some of the suites start at 5. I believe that was more a function of how many of the suites there were to fit in any one single address block. Now, not to throw anybody under the Airbus, so to speak, but the actual addressing numbers were assigned by the Carson City Assessor's Office in keeping with the Carson City Ordinance on that. So once we decided that we were going to basically bring the airport into the addressing world with the rest of the city, it seemed appropriate to go to be guided by that. And you know, if there are specific problem areas, those can obviously be addressed and adjusted. Again, this is just a proposal, and we want to make it work for the airport as well as for the ordinance.
Just one more question. Well, each, do you envision having each hangar, for instance, mine would be number 35, 2820 Echo Lane. Do you envision having the entire address on each one of the hangars, or would it just simply be 35?
No, so the vision was to have the building addressed from, say, in this case, Taxi Lane Echo, and then the individual hangars have just the suite number. So you wouldn't have the fully formed address on each hangar door. No, sir.
Any other questions from board members? Morris?
I guess I need a clarification from Steve. Several times now, Mr. Schmidt has referred to the Carson City Assessor as being the address addressing official. However, Tim supplied us with the city ordinances, I guess this morning. On page 1, 22.2 definitions, addressing official. The city engineer is charged with administering the standards. And then, again, the city engineer is to assign the numbers. So can we have a clarification on where actually where the authority lays on that?
Hey, honestly, I don't know the answer to that. I would have to check with both the assessor and city engineer to see how they coordinate things. I do know the assessor has kind of taken the lead on the airport area because they are the ones who assign separate assessor parcel numbers for each of the hangars. Once we started condoizing hangars, it got very complicated for the assessor's office.
Right.
And so they jumped in and devised a method for giving specific parcel numbers to each hangar. And so I would need to check with them, but my guess is the engineer and the assessor's office are working together on this, and it may well be that the assessor's office is taking the lead.
Okay. I know in the notice on the agenda item, it talks about the airport authority paying a contractor perhaps to put the numbers on the buildings. However, in that ordinance that Tim supplied on page 422.3.1, D, the property owner is responsible to do that. And also C, number 3, that the city shall notify. So I'm wondering, what role does the authority even play in this, other than creating a cooperative environment to get it done? I don't see, at least by the way I read the ordinance, I don't see where the authority, the airport authority, has any authority to paint the numbers, tell the people to paint the numbers. So I'm just wondering, I think we need a clarification as to what our role is in this situation.
I think I might be able to clarify that. In 1989, the Airport Authority was created. About the same time the Airport Authority was created by the Nevada legislature, the city and the airport entered into a cooperative agreement under which the city would remain the legal owner of the property, but the Airport Authority would take care of all management and all duties that an owner would otherwise exercise. And so under the cooperative agreement, if it says the city is supposed to be doing something here on the airport, it probably means the Airport Authority is supposed to be doing it. I could go back and pull that cooperative agreement and get it for you to confirm that, but that's the way I would read this. The question about financing, I don't, that's Tim's portion of this item. I don't know what is really involved in painting these numbers. Part of me thinks it might just be holding a stencil up in a spray can. Maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but I think that perhaps it would be wise for us to be in communication with the fire department on that, because they're really the ones that we're trying to set this up for, so that we have the emergency services throughout the airport. And so I think we'd want to coordinate with them.
Actually, the ordinance does specify a standard as to how the numbers will be put on the buildings. So there's really nothing for us to to discuss on that. The standard is set.
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't. You know, if you go to the 22.7, I believe it is, it talks about the building numbers being 5 inches in height and the actual unit numbers being 3 inches in height. And then there's some diagrams at the end of the ordinance that give samples. But what's not clear is where would you put them on a hanger? Would you put them over the man door, you know, the walk-in door to the hangar, or would you put them on the hangar door to the hangar? And on some hangars, the hangar door and the man door are right next to each other. On some hangars, they're on the opposite side of the building. So there are some issues that require some input from us. And when you go back and look at that ordinance on the 5 inches and 3 inches, subsequently in that ordinance it says something like complex addressing situations may, you know, can deviate from this. And I suspect that we have a somewhat complex, I mean, we want to be as close as possible to the ordinance because we want the uniformity that that Mr. Schmidt is talking about, so that when they plug it into the fire, police, ambulance system, those guys will go to the right place. But the flip side is we also got to be thinking about, okay, what makes sense here so that if we send them to the wrong side of the building, we're not doing a disservice to the person who's clutching their chest. So there is some input that I think we can and should give. I think it should be done somewhat in cooperation with the fire police guys.
And I will tell you that from their perspective, they will recommend that the number be placed on a door that does not move or could not be hidden when it's open.
That's a problem because most of the man doors are built into the big metal door, and when the door goes up, it goes away. So there are, again, and as Steve pointed out, some of these hangars have one door on one side and one on the other, and they go through the alleyway. So it's a question of which alleyway are you addressing on. That's why I had originally said most people on the airport don't know this is happening and don't have these issues. And these couple of questions about, well, you know, some people have the name of, you know, their airplane company or whatever, or their LLC that they own their airplane, and they have it painted on the door. I mean, does the number go above that or does it go below that? And to Morris's point, whether it's the owner's responsibility, all these hangars were numbered originally by the airport authority when they were built, and they were given designations that the builders put on the hangars at that point. So this is a readdressing of the buildings, a mandated readdressing. So I don't know how that factors into who pays for it, which I know a couple of people have already asked questions about. Anyway.
Well, let me just offer this as a bit of reassurance. What we're proposing here is a system, and it's a system that is applied based on the system rules. That said, obviously, adjustments can be made for special situations and special circumstances, and it can be adjusted. Any of these numbers, if it's more appropriate for a hangar to be accessed from one side over the other, those adjustments can all be made. That's the beauty of a system like this, is that it is flexible, even though it's logical.
I think that this is a place where, you know, as we narrow in on implementation, given some of these questions of practicality and of aesthetics and consistency, is sort of a good place for, you know, the airport authority and manager as sort of HOA to kind of put on our architecture and landscape committee hats and, draft something up. For discussion with the tenants and for review and sort of really look at this on what are the general and the special case bases, and we're going to have to address these. I mean, no one's going to do this for us. So, you know, if that means it's all going to be, 5-inch Helvetica letters in gray, then that's what it's going to be. Try to get some consistency of quality, consistency of appearance, and, most importantly, address the, no pun intended, I like that. Address the matters of, you know, practically speaking, okay, well, if it goes on a door that's about to fold and disappear, that's a problem. If we're really talking about how do you respond with a human being, whether they're in a mail truck or a fire truck, make sure that we're labeling the right door, things like that. The other comment I wanted to make that I thought was encouraging was, as you said, you know, any draft of this can be provided in a digitally explorable format. I think a very convenient and effective way to share this in the spirit of a tenants meeting or in advance of that tenants meeting would be to find a way to put the plug in to view something like that at an appropriate link on the airport website so that we can notice that in advance of the meeting. Go check this out, find where your space is, think it through, and come prepared to discuss it further. I mean, if we can do that practically, I think that would be a really nice thing to say. You know, here's the link to the proposed, you know, the proposed addressing system.
That's very doable.
Anything else from the questions from the board? Okay, anyone in the public who wishes to comment on this matter? Seeing none, then we're back to the board for any other further questions, comments, motions. Okay, I'm going to
I'll try
a motion that I would like to make. First, I would like to move that the Airport Authority endorse the efforts to install the GIS system at the airport. Part one of the motion. Part two of the motion is that we direct the airport manager to coordinate a tenants meeting and work thoroughly to make sure that all tenants, even those that are not here, are contacted to be sure that they're aware of this and gather either input or provide them with a mechanism to gain an understanding of how the system will work. Following that, we bring it back to the board for an approval once that tenant input and review has occurred.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any comments or questions from the board? Comments or questions from the public on the matter? Yes, Mr. Schmidt.
Would it be at that tenants meeting that, or how would we derive what the, which direction we're going to go with the taxi lane names? That's going to need to be clarified and resolved one way or the other.
Well, I'm envisioning that a representative, either you or a representative of your entity, would be there, and you'd get the input from the public. The board would have to make the final decision, and, you know, we'll get the input from the airport manager as to what, you know, how the tenants feel. I think actually the naming of the taxi lanes is probably, it's already on the airport map, and I think we have to stay consistent with it or modify the airport map. I'm assuming that any, and I'm sorry to get into this right here, but I'm assuming that should at some point in the future we change the name of a road, like if it happens in a city, then the addressing system can accommodate a road name change. So it should be able to accept a taxi lane change, which so we could stay with what we've got and then modify, as Carl pointed out, if we wound up with a taxiway Echo, then we would have to rename Echo Lane something else.
We change road names all the time.
Okay. Any, again, comments, any other comments from the public? Mr. Takis.
I just wanted to mention, I was just checking with the airport engineer here, those names do not appear on our airport layout plan, the one filed with the FAA, so I'm thinking that like Echo Lane might appear on maybe a lease parcel map or something like that, which is not a recorded map. So if you wanted to change Echo Lane or Foxtrot Lane, I don't see any problem with that. I don't know. Frankly, I go up and down there all the time. I never knew it was called Echo Lane because there's no signs up there anywhere.
Somehow I've known that. That's for years I've known that was Echo. I didn't know the one behind the Jet Ranch was Foxtrot, but I knew that the one down there was Echo. I think it's actually on the old master plan is probably where I knew it. Maybe that's where it is. But and again, this would come up in the proposed tenants meeting, that if we want to come up with some other specific name, we could do that. Okay. We have no further discussion from the public. Any further discussion from the board? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Those opposed, if there be any? Seeing none, the motion carries unanimously. Okay. Item number four, which is I've lost track of the numbers. I think we're three now. Discussion and possible action regarding the accumulation of derelict and stored aircraft adjacent to taxiway Bravo, explanation of why aircraft and vehicles are stored there, rent being collected, alternative storage or disposal, return of the aircraft to the lien holders, other action to remediate the problem. Mr. Miles.
Good evening, board. My name is Bill Miles, and I am a member of the Carson City Investment Group that purchased approximately 47 acres to the east of Taxiway Bravo, or the north-south runway. So I've worked around the Carson City Airport for probably 20 years, doing hangars, et cetera, et cetera. And in my knowledge of that vacant land that is to the east of the north-south taxiway there, it was never available to lease for the construction of hangars because of the deeded through the fence access on that property. So the Carson City Investment Group that I'm involved with, which is mostly Carson City business people and a couple other folks, in anticipation of AB 161 passing, we invested a lot of money there, and we are currently investing money there today. We've done some utility due diligence, utility entitlement work, engineering work, soils work, and we've had people that have been looking at our property already. So with that said, so I just have a question of why they are now storing aircraft in the dirt, because, you know, there is plenty of blacktop around the airport to store aircraft and to rent aircraft. I mean, I'm very concerned about one of the airplanes out there essentially being a pigeon coop. I mean, you know, a lot of people think pigeons are, you know, furry little birds, but they are flesh and bones flying about. And as we all know, you know, birds and aircraft don't mix. I mean, there's incidents every year of birds and aircraft and bad things happening. So at this point in time, I just want to try to say, is there any way we can address getting the pigeon coop aircraft and the other aircraft that are there onto some leased ground that somebody is responsible for other than the airport authority? And I'm just kind of curious now, is that ground available to lease, or is it still somewhat in a reserve and not available?
Okay. Questions from the board, and I'll start with one. I also wanted to know, where did all the sewer pipes suddenly come from? Because there's now a big pile of sewer pipes right next, just north of the airplanes.
Yeah, that was all left over from the construction of the main runway and taxiways. That's easily moved. We can get that out of there.
Regarding Mr. Miles' comment on the pigeon coop airplane, I share another concern regarding that one, and that is that is a serious health hazard in addition to an aircraft hazard. The amount of pigeon excrement over there is staggering, and that stuff's not healthy. And that aircraft is literally, the thing should be condemned. or restored or something. But I don't think it's healthy to have it there, and it's certainly, I agree, it's pretty unsightly. And I know the tenants along Taxiway Bravo are not at all happy with the situation of the growing aircraft. So that's my comment on it. So I'll start with, on my left, Morris, any questions or comments regarding the derelict aircraft?
I thought a few months ago we had given Tim direction to start finding the source of those airplanes and getting them moved out of there. So has there been any action at all?
There is this week. The three small aircraft will be moved by the end of this week. We're hoping to have them last week. However, the rain softened the dirt up, so we've been waiting for it to dry out a little bit. But Steve Posick with Carson Aviation, Member Posick, and his company will be moving those aircraft by the end of this week. The Albatross and two S-2s owned by Cactus Air Force, we can start moving those as early as tomorrow. They're all restoration aircraft, but I was assured whenever they need them moved, they will start moving them. There's another Albatross, which the number escapes me. It is owned by a fellow in Texas, and that is going to, there's tires been ordered for that. It will be moved off of Taxiway Bravo. The problem is the Albatross owned by Yvette Weaver. Sent an email, tried calling, no response yet. But she does pay $90 a month for parking. I get a check automatically each month. In fact, they get paid for all of the aircraft except for the small derelicts, but they're on their way out. I've been looking for a little guidance on what to do with regard to Yvette Weaver's aircraft, and so this would be a good opportunity to write a letter to get it out of here. I would rather have this airplane gone rather than being parked on the airport.
Tim, when you say they're in the process of or will be moved by the end of the week, where are they going to be moved to?
The small aircraft will be moved back onto the tie-down area of Sterling Air. Those aircraft is his responsibility anyhow. The Cactus Air Force airplanes, when they move, I believe they mentioned that they're going to move them to the Northwest apron. These are aircraft that can be easily moved. Tires are good. There's no problem with moving them. The aircraft owned by Mr. Ralph is the for sale aircraft that will be moved. My understanding is it's going to be moved to the lot adjacent to Sterling's hangar. And the only unknown right now is what we're going to do with the Yvette Weaver aircraft, the pigeon coop.
Carl, comments?
Sure. And thank you, Tim, for the explanation on where these things are going, and I'm encouraged that they are finally going somewhere, bar one, it sounds like. I certainly echo Mr. Miles' concern, and you know, I would take a moment to say, you know, first off, that I am excited that the transaction that you guys conducted, the investment and the foresight, and you know, I think the future visioning that you and your partners put together is very exciting to the airport because it represents in many ways the I think down the road the clearing of an impasse that has gone on for a very, very long time in terms of understanding where some of those through the fence rights might be exercised. And you know, not to say that you know, hurry up and do that. That's not the point. But I know that in the process of developing those lots, those decisions will be able to happen sooner than later and unlock the potential in the airport-owned property on the east side of Taxiway Bravo in perhaps some exciting ways, in conjunction with you and your partners, potential tenants or future clients. Developments in conjunction with airport activity. So to me, this is very encouraging for the future. I mention it because the last thing we would want to do as the airport authority is present a face that is disadvantageous to folks like yourselves who are trying to develop economic activity in Carson City and, you know, do things that bring in you know, revenue for the airport, for the city, the community. So I know that it's tricky when you're trying to paint a picture and show someone a vision of the future to say, what's all that pigeon crap? You know, that's not helping, okay? And so I just like to say that I think it's in our interest and in our duty in the spirit of you know, our community interest that we, you know, we do whatever is in our power to hasten the cleaning up of this. So it seems like we're down to one now. And if we can find some good ways to, you know, blow that thing up or dispose of it in some legal way, I think it's imperative we do so.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Hutter.
Steve.
Okay. As you may well know, I'm the mover of the little derelict airplanes. Two of the three have been moved. The biggest problem we have with them is the owners declined to do anything about it. We've checked into legal fees. We're looking between $6,000 and $10,000 paid by somebody to get the title to those airplanes. None of them are worth that much, so what do you do when nobody's willing to start that process? I don't think the airport board or the budget can afford that kind of thing to get rid of those airplanes.
Cut them up and sell them for scrap.
We don't have title to them. They will not sell them. I tried to get them to donate, but the liens against the airplanes right now exceed the value of the airplanes.
Right. And again, Steve, probably my biggest issue going back 20 years and working on the airport is that ground that those planes got parked on was never available for lease. So, you know, I'm very concerned that Tim, I don't want to belittle him or anything, leased it out and is collecting money on ground that was, from my understanding, because I had clients and myself that looked at potential hangars there, that they said, no, absolutely not, that ground cannot be leased. And that was an airport policy going back 20 years ago. And, you know, things happen, you know, I understand. So it's something that I feel, as somebody who invested considerable money in property, understand what the policy was, because we have a dedicated through-the-fence access. Once we determine our through-the-fence access, quite frankly, this airport then again has the ability to lease that ground to people to build hangars and, again, generate more revenue. So, you know, a problem was created there that I feel should have never been created based on my knowledge of previous airport policies, laws, rules, and regulations.
Well, it seemed in our best interest at the time when we were doing the asphalt to get the airplanes away from the new asphalt, and they were never brought back. That's our problem.
I think that you're connecting, Mr. Miles, the two things, you know, this policy with absolute fact and a fact that you and your partners changed. What we couldn't, you know, in good conscience do was to lease any portion of that airport-owned strip out to someone who's going to build something permanent, knowing that the owner of what's now your group's parcels could say, aha, but we would like our through-the-fence access to go through the middle of that building. Now that we're in a place where, you know, those decisions might be made sometime in the not-too-distant future, this opens up, as I mentioned, I think, the utility and the revenue potential of our airport strip of land. So at the moment, we have mild revenue. I'm not going to, you know, make a comment as to whether it is net positive, you know, relative to the eyesore. I would suggest it may be net negative, but at least they're movable things, yeah. Right? So, you know, nobody built something permanent. We can wheel whatever's there out of there now and resolve this.
Phil?
Yeah, I would like to add support to your concern about the fact that that pigeon airplane is a health hazard. There is a disease that you can get from pigeon crap if it happens to land in your eye. It's toxic plasmosis. bad thing, make you blind, those other things. So if you happen to be out there, make sure you wear sunglasses. Also, it occurred to me we may have gotten rid of those coyotes a little bit too soon. If we could have given them an entryway into that airplane, it would have solved the pigeon problem.
I think we would have had dead coyotes and they went in there.
Yeah. I like things that fly, but, you know, there's a limit. So anyway, that's all I have to say.
It would appear, then, that with the exception of the pigeon airplane, which is the biggest offender, we've solved at least temporarily all the problems. The airplanes are either going at the north ramp or the south ramp. So that's that. And then the question is, what do we do with the pigeon airplane in the interim? I would have to ask, if the owner of the aircraft is non-responsive, I would ask counsel, can we do something like have the Board of Health come over and condemn that thing? And would that solve, then that would force, even if we had to have it destroyed?
Yeah, I don't know if that really solves it. I think the more direct approach is we should make a demand upon Ms. Yvette Weaver, the owner of the aircraft, to remove the aircraft and just tell her she can't store it here anymore and let her deal with it. At one point, I had suggested that maybe we pull down one of the fences and we tow it over and put it in a parking lot, but, you know, that's probably not a very polite thing to do. But, you know, we did have difficulty in the past getting the rent from her. Twice we had to go to, I think it was twice, we had to go to lien sales only to be paid the morning of the lien sale. So we went through that process. And by the way, that process doesn't cost 8 or whatever it is, 6 to 8. Okay.
To get title to the aircraft to be responsible and take care of it is that amount of money, okay, to go through the title.
All right, well, you know, we were able to do it for something closer to $1,000 here and schedule the lien sale, and the only thing left was to actually sell the aircraft. And so you might want to check with whoever you're getting your bids from. But the bottom line is, I think a more direct approach would be to go to Ms. Weaver and just tell her she can't store it here anymore. I mean, I had hoped to have time to look through the city ordinances on nuisance, because something that is a health concern and also not flyable and does not look like it's restorable even, probably shouldn't be stored in the airport in the first instance. I would also mention that when we did go to lien sales previously, the phone calls we got were from aluminum scrap dealers. They're the only ones who showed any kind of interest at all, because apparently there's a lot of aluminum in an aluminum albatross. I think somebody else commented to me that they probably need hazmat suits to come cut it up. I don't know. But my recommendation is that we go directly. And if you'd like me to do that, I'm happy to send that letter to Ms. Weaver.
And I'll just add, Steve, unfortunately, owning other rental properties, I've had success in going to the people who actually have the lien on the aircraft. So, for instance, if a Harley-Davidson lent on that airplane and the previous owner had abandoned it, you can make a demand of Harley-Davidson to deal with the plane. And they might say, rather than dealing with it, they just might give you the title. But I've had good success doing that, because there is a liability with the lien holder. And again, that's legal stuff that's beyond me, but I know I've had success with other equipment and abandoned property getting rid of it that way.
We've looked. Two of the three owners are dead, and the third one is somewhere in the state management position, the Crossbar Hotel. So we've attempted to contact these people, and the lien holder is the owner of the tie-down leases, and he's refusing to me so far to reduce that. We could probably do a lien sale and buy these for a buck or two and then pay the lien holder a fee to less than the value of the airplane to get rid of them, and then we could dismantle them and haul them away.
Those are, what you're talking about is the issues of those are not the airport, the authority that's involved in those. That's the,
no, no, these were Sterling. These were on the Sterling Air lease, okay. And we moved them for the paving.
Okay.
All right. And you're moving them back to the Sterling Air lease.
Okay. But in the interim, just to deal with, we've solved, all the problems have been solved except for the ultimate offender. And is there something we can do with it? I don't think anybody wants to go near it, but is there something we can do with it at present? We got someplace else we could tow it? I mean, do we even have a mechanism to tow that thing?
Yeah, I have a thought. Steve made the suggestion, or at least the thought, presented the thought that it would be nice to open up the fence and tow it through. Okay. Our airport is right adjacent to the fire department, and they have vehicles out there that they'd like to practice on. Now, Yvette Weaver, one of the reasons I think she doesn't want to sell it is because she's sentimentally attached to it because it was her, you know, her late husband's project. She might, you know, be willing to let it be cremated. if we presented it to her properly, we might be able to get rid of it that way. And the fire department, it would be nice if they had a real airplane to practice on, too. So it would be good for everybody.
It's an interesting thought, but we still have to somehow physically move it in to accommodate Mr. Miles' issue with prospective purchasers seeing the landbound pigeon coop it as the first thing they see when they come to look at the property. I'm asking, is there something we can do with it in the interim? Because if you've had very little luck getting response from Ms. Weaver, then I don't hold out hope that we're going to solve in the next 30 days, you know, getting something. I mean, I believe we should try, and I believe that we should take up counsel on his offer to write the letter. In the interim, is there something we can do to get it out of there and move it so that it's further away from people or places? The only place I think we've got left is somewhere well back in off the old dirt runway. With towing it back, I don't know how you tow it back there, though, because it's basically derelict.
The only thing that I could think of as far as where to put it is where it was some years ago was on the center triangle, the old dirt runway. Getting it there, I would suggest a crane. There's one large enough to pick it up and move it with some people guiding it. Outside of that, I don't know of anyone who has a dolly large enough to where that could be actually towed. Might ask around and see what I can find.
Well, I guess the status of it being on that patch of ground in exchange for money is on effectively a month-to-month tie-down. Is that sort of the legal structure that would surround that? So would step one basically, I think as was recommended, be informing the owner that you know, basically the lease is terminated, that this spot is no longer available for aircraft storage, then we have to somehow stop accepting the money. But I'm sure you guys know how to do all that, right? I mean, I think that really, you know, to get this to an action at some point quickly here, we need to start that process in motion. Whatever it is that one has to do to tidy this up and send official word that you are no longer welcome to park the airplane there for any amount of money.
I don't think that it's necessary to give a reason. I believe we can just say, look, we've decided that your aircraft is not currently registered, and it is not. It's the only aircraft over there besides the small ones that is not registered. And because of that, that's enough to remove it from, have it removed from the airport. So when it was on the triangle originally, I was still receiving a tie-down fee for it, even though it wasn't tied down. Pigeons were holding it down. So we just gave them a new place to roost.
Yeah, I do not want to personally entertain any moving this at our expense, at someone else's expense. I mean, this game of, you know, of whack-a-mole would continue forever. It's time to make this go away.
Anything further from the board? Further comments from members of the public? Seeing none, we're back to the board. We stand in need of a motion or not.
Do we need a motion, or can we just give council directive to begin the process?
I'd be more comfortable if there was a motion authorizing me to go forward with that, to notify the any remaining tenants on that area that that area is not available for storage and they need to remove their aircraft.
I move what Steve said.
Tamar, were you able to get Steve's comment and then structure that as a motion? Okay, we have a motion.
Seconded.
It is now set. Motion and a second. Further discussion from the... Carl seconded. We have a motion and a second. Any further comment or discussion from the board? Members of the public that would like to comment on the motion? Seeing none, we're back to the board for a vote. All those in favor of the motion as presented?
Aye.
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 Those opposed, if there be any? The motion carries.
I'd like to thank the board for their effort in this matter, and airport manager, Mr. Rowe, I do appreciate the effort. Thank you.
You're welcome, and we appreciate yours to help us develop our airport. Thank you, Bill. Okay, we're back to the remaining public hearings, and we are now going to take item number one, which is the election of officers, and in place in reason for that is the remaining item is an administrative one that I believe should be handled by the new officers. So the process is we place names in nomination. Unfortunately, or fortunately, the members of the public don't have to comment on this one. This is strictly a board matter. Every July of an odd-numbered year, the airport authority must elect officers if there hasn't been an election within the 12-month period preceding it. And we're in that role, so we need to have an election this evening. It's customary for the outgoing chairman to present a slate of officers and then allow for additional members to nominate others if they so choose, and then to vote on each of the members of the slate individually. So as outgoing chairman, I would like to nominate as the next chairman, Mr. Carl Hutter. I would like to nominate as the vice chairman, Mr. Don Peterson, who has had a great deal of experience in our efforts. And I would like to nominate Mr. Morris White as our treasurer for the coming however long anybody cares to stand in these offices. Those are my nominations. I open it up to other nominations if there be any.
I don't have any nominations, but it sounded like our first guest of the evening was disputing that. And is this going to cause us a problem next month?
Mr. Murdoch apparently is not happy that he was not appointed. There was some gross inaccuracies in the article that was written in the newspaper by your company, Mr. Posick. And I don't know where he's going to take that, but we're not the appointing authority. The Board of Supervisors is. The advice that they were given was advice from the DA's office. He apparently didn't listen carefully, nor did the author of this little article. But if he's got a problem, he should be talking to the district attorney. Apparently, instead, he prefers to complain to everybody else and write articles in the paper instead of treating it like a more mature individual.
I wasn't necessarily referring to Mr. Murdoch. I was referring to Jerry Vaccaro when he made the insinuation first, so that's who I was picking on.
Well, I guess it doesn't really matter. The Board of Supervisors is the appointing authority, so if you're suggesting that because somebody came up here and spoke to this body, that somehow invalidates an action by the Board of Supervisors, I can tell you right now it does not.
Those people should talk to the DA's office if they have an issue. Apparently they're not wanting to do that, and so I don't see any reason why Don Peterson will not be here next month and be active as a member of the Airport Authority. In fact, he was unanimously chosen by the Board of Supervisors. So,
okay, you've made your point. That's all I wanted to know.
So we have, do we have any further nominations? If not, then...
I just have one question.
Yes.
I'm wondering if there are any duties of the treasurer that I don't have qualifications for.
The duties of the secretary treasurer, and it's actually secretary treasurer, there those positions are combined, are to be the official keeper of the finances of the authority. However, in practice, that means that the airport manager reports those finances to you, and you essentially look and confirm. You would also be the signatory on checks that are executed by the authority. Beyond that, the secretary, in theory, you are the keeper of records of the minutes. However, we have a recording secretary who does all that, and the minutes are presented to the entire board. So there's really not much to do on that portion of the job. The only other requirement is that we are required to maintain a surety bond for the treasurer, and that's something the airport does at its expense. If it later turned out that, you know, we couldn't get a surety bond on you or something like that, we would have to revisit it. I find that highly unlikely. I'm not aware of anything that would disqualify you from the position.
Thank you.
Okay. Our first order is to vote on the chairman. All those in favor of Mr. Hutter as chairman?
I don't think a motion is made when you're voting on officers. There's nominations. The nominations are closed, and then you. Okay, when officers are elected, there is not a motion and a second. What happens is the rules of order state that nominations are open, nominations are made, nominations are closed, and then a vote is taken. If there's more than one person nominated for a position, then a vote must be taken in a method under which you can determine who is the successful person. I don't remember if the chairman closed the nominations, but.
Well, I see no further nominations, but I will for the record state that the nominations are now closed and we need a confirmation vote. I'm just simply asking for a vote. Do you want to do them one at a time or you just want to vote all three at once? Do them one. We'll vote one at a time. All those in favor of Vice Chairman Hutter taking over as chairman of the Airport Authority? Aye.
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 Opposed, if there be any? Seeing none, Mr. Hutter is now the new chairman. All those in favor of Mr. Peterson as vice chairman?
Aye.
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 Opposed, if there be any? Seeing none, Mr. Peterson is the vice chairman. All those in favor of Member White as treasurer, secretary treasurer? Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, if there be any? Seeing none, Mr. White is now the secretary treasurer. And with that, I hand the gavel to Mr. Hutter for the final items of the meeting.
Well, first off, I want to say thank you very much to the members of this authority and the staff for all of the great work that we've done together. In my term on the authority to date, I really appreciate the vote of confidence that you've all expressed tonight. That means a lot to me, and I very much look forward to serving in good faith and in good spirit to further the interests of the airport and help us execute our duties to Carson City and our airport tenants and all these communities. It's a great honor to have the opportunity to do so. I also would certainly like to acknowledge and thank outgoing Chair Guy Williams for his great service at the helm, his continued service on the board for some time yet, I believe, 2 months, and for his friendship and leadership here on the authority and in the airport community. You've certainly been a real citizen of the airport, and again, thank you for your service and volunteering. And as we go forward, I certainly will look forward to working with you, Morris, as the Secretary and Treasurer, to Mr. Peterson. I suppose once he is sworn in, or is that all done, and I guess that's done and done, when he makes it to the next meeting, and of course, everybody else as well. So moving it right along, we are now at item number 6 on the agenda, and I guess it really is 6. Kupal item was taken out, so item number 5, discussion and possible action regarding the posting of support materials on the website, publishing the agenda, and supporting materials to the public. And I suppose that's with regard to our meetings in advance of our meetings. Member White.
Yes, exactly. I feel it's vitally important that not just the agendas, but the support material be posted so that the public has an opportunity to understand what we're talking about. A good example of that is just tonight with the map for the addressing. I'm not sure that anybody in the public, had they even been aware of it, would be able to have made a comment. So I have been in discussions with Tim in regarding to this, and I believe Tim may have some update on how we might go ahead and get this accomplished.
There's not a big problem with posting it on the website. The only thing that I'm concerned about is the size of some files. We get some pretty large files, and that could be a problem posting some things, but anything could be modified down to size in order to at least cover the items that are being discussed. So I think that's easily done, and I think it's a very good idea.
I'm a big proponent and have talked for quite a long time, also to the Board of Supervisors, that all of the agendas for the various boards and committees and such are on a common template. Now, I understand the airport authority is a somewhat different sort of animal, but I would advocate taking a look at how the Board of Supervisors' agendas are put together and how the support materials are attached to each individual agenda item. That might help you get through with that particular situation. What else did I have? Also, what was left off of here was that posting the minutes in a timely manner to the website as well. Currently, when I checked this morning, there are 8 meetings that do not have the minutes posted. All of those meetings have had the minutes approved. So I think we need to also see that the minutes are posted so that when the public wants to take a look at what we have done, they're not on the airport's website.
Oh, okay, but they are on the city's website, carson.org/minutes.
Okay.
I can also publish the draft and name it the draft minutes for that particular month. That's easily done. Once the minutes are approved, then I'll replace that with the final.
Let me make a comment here just real quickly. I totally support what Member White is proposing. I think that's not only good policy, I think it's also consistent with the open meeting law, which says that the agendas need to be published at least 3 business days before the meeting,
and that the supporting materials have to be made available to the public. By putting them on the website, I think you get much greater availability. I think that's a smart and good idea. With respect to the posting of the minutes, if the recording secretary is already posting them to the Carson City webpage, all you would need to do to put on the airport page is simply a link to where those minutes are already being posted. That way, anybody who goes to the airport page can just click the link and get to the minutes.
Mr. Chair, we also publish the recording with the minutes.
The audio.
Audio recording.
And thirdly, I think the agendas need to be posted on the Carson City website. I realize, again, that the airport authority is somewhat of a different animal, but people would, not knowing the arrangement between the airport and the city, would just naturally go to the city's website to access this material. And I think you can get this accomplished in much the same manner that the Commission to Reconstruct the V&T Railroad has their agendas posted on the city website as well. It's just as an addendum at the bottom of their list of boards and commissions. So it is separated, because, again, that's not a Carson City entity either.
Well, thank you, Member White. I would turn this to the board. Maybe my first question, if I could take a stab at it, with regard to minutes, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that it is appropriate to be publishing minutes in a draft format. The minutes aren't the minutes till the minutes are approved. Is that a correct understanding, Mr. Tegas?
That's correct. That's one of the reasons I suggested just do the link to the minutes that are actually approved. Because if you're starting to put drafts out there, it's almost like you're asking for public comment, and what the minutes are supposed to be doing is accurately reflecting the action that you've taken, and you guys are the arbiters of whether the draft is accurate, not, you know, the world at large.
And a second question to Council Takis is, I guess that this may be an obvious one. I just want to check to make sure there's something I'm not maybe missing. In the supporting materials, I think you cleared this up, all the supporting materials for agendized items are by definition a public matter, you know, available to the public. There's nothing that would come up that would be an exception to that. I mean, there's nothing like maybe a lease or a contract, or, I mean, I guess if it's going to be here on an agendized item, it's got to be a public thing. So is there any exception to that that we would need to be aware of if we were going to say, and all supporting materials will automatically go to a website, let's say?
The only exceptions that I can think of would be exceptions to the open meeting law. And the primary one is if there is anticipation of litigation. Clearly, when I give you guys confidential legal advice because we could get sued for something, we don't want to publish that so that the people on the other side can see what advice I'm giving you as to where the strengths and weaknesses of our position are. As a result, that is an exception to the open meeting law. And so those communications would not get published. However, those communications would probably have to be actually vetted to the extent there are discussions in a closed meeting of the airport authority, which, frankly, I think that's the only exception that applies to us, is for closing a meeting, is for to discuss litigation. And then you come out of the meeting, out of the closed session, and then you vote on what you're going to do. And ostensibly that lets the public know what you're doing, but it doesn't force you to reveal the basis or the consideration that you made in doing that. So that one area would occur that way. But for the most part, everything that goes on our agendas is public information. I think that's a good general rule. There are very few exceptions. And what you usually get is you get briefings from three people. You get briefings from the airport manager, you get briefings from the airport council, and you get briefings from the airport engineer. Occasionally, you'll have things that are submitted by other people, but typically, we will include those in our briefings. The one logistical issue would be that we really should try and have our agendas fixed before the last minute. You know, it seems like we have forever, and this is something that's happened since 1989, the Airport Authority was formed. We've always been kind of pushing the envelope and doing our agendas, publishing them at the very last moment, in part because things seem to change right up to the last point. Well, if we're going to be true to getting our agendas and the supporting materials out at the same time, we probably need to complete those agendas maybe at least a day earlier than we are currently doing. And so that would be the one practical aspect that we should probably consider.
Could I ask just one question about that? One thing occurs to me that when we have people applying for businesses at the airport and people who are applying for either to be leaseholders, these people submit a confidential financial statement that generally goes to you for review before, and then it comes to us, but it's they're giving us their confidential financials. And I'm guessing that those would not be made public since they're given to us in confidence for review.
That's correct. Each time that happens, I have to go back and look at the public records law to see what can be kept confidential. But you're right. There are certain elements of things that are submitted to us which, by their nature, need to remain confidential. Pretty limited stuff. And you've hit the one that probably happens the most often, even though it doesn't happen very often, and that would be, financial statements for somebody who's not a publicly traded company.
So that I'm glad that we had that exchange, because where I was going to is if we're going to set a process in motion, and believe me, I know the ill effects of this from our own business, you set something in motion if we're not really clear on, what doesn't go, okay, it's very easy to have an escape, not due to anyone's malintent. But, all this stuff goes up on the website. Next thing you know, someone's screaming, my confidential financials are now on the website. We just need to make sure we're darn clear at whoever's executing that. And I would assume it would be the airport manager would be responsible for making that upload, that, the guidelines, the instruction set's really clear.
And I think that just goes to what I would refer to as proprietary information, and that would require Tim to be pretty knowledgeable about what the open meeting law says, and if there's any question whether it's a proprietary piece of information, you should run it by counsel.
I think the best way to address it, since we're not really obligated to have things up on the website, we are obligated by the open meeting law to do certain things, but if there's any question about whether something should go up on the website, just don't put it up.
Actually, we are obligated to have it on the website, because NRS states that if the entity maintains a website, they must post their agendas and their public materials on the website. If we didn't have a website, it wouldn't be an issue.
I think it just says the agendas and the minutes have to be posted if you have a website.
Is supporting not the support material part of the agenda?
The supporting materials need to be made available to the public. But I have to drill back in. NRS 241 is a very long section.
Yes, it is.
And so if you would allow me, I will go back in and verify that if what you're saying is correct and that the supporting documents need to be posted, well, then we should have been doing it all along, and we need to fix that right away.
Mm-hmm.
But let me see if I can find it pretty quick here.
Even if you find a place that excludes us from being mandated to do that, I think it's still the proper thing to do, and simply be careful we don't put any proprietary information up there.
While counsel is hunting, any other comments from the board? I would say that I think this is best practice, and it's something that implemented properly in an efficient way, I think is not only convenient, but is modern and, really speaks to the spirit of making the information widely available. And I do mean the supporting materials as well as the additional posting location, basically, of the agenda, as you described. I think that really this is probably more a matter of technique now. But to that end, there is some website modification I would imagine we have to do to host that information. I mean, not serious modification, but we need to create a place for it. I guess it would be in whatever the structure is that currently holds the agendas and minutes. That we'd upload that to You know, I don't think this is complex stuff, and we have plenty of examples of how it's done. I've certainly seen in the Reno Tahoe Airport Authority how they do it, and City of Carson City. So I think we've got good models. Council.
So I reviewed the statute quickly, and it does directly address proprietary information, saying that that is not made available to the public. However, what it says for supporting materials, it must be made available to the public essentially at the same time it's made available to the public body. And then it refers to supporting material which is first made available at the hearing. And so, and I think what they're really talking about is you've got an agenda item, you've kicked out the agenda and the supporting material, and somebody comes up and says, yeah, but see this, you know, this tells you something different, or this is something essential to your consideration. That has to be made available to members of the public at the meeting. So the long and the short of it is it's a great practice. I think we should strive to do the practice of getting the supporting material up there with the agenda. It just means that what we really should do is we should finalize the agenda a day earlier than we do, assuming that gives enough time to the three of us to get our briefing memos to you.
Well, I suppose this is really action, all of which the airport manager can take, but it feels good to me that, you know, that we encode that, you know, in a motion. Member White, I mean, would you like to go for that as the host of this item?
I would indeed. I move that.
I'm just being reminded. Thank you very much, wise ex-chairman. Public comment on this matter. We haven't had any opportunity for public comment. Okay. Seeing none, sorry to interrupt.
That's fine. I move that going forward, each agenda support materials be posted to the website, that the agenda be posted to the Carson City website, that the minutes be posted to the airport website in a timely manner, that the airport agenda be modeled in the same fashion as the Carson City Board of Supervisors agenda. I think that's it.
I just have one question that I didn't understand. The very last portion, are you saying that the format that we're using for the agenda should change? Well, when you said should be modeled after the Board of Supervisors.
Well, exactly. What I'm intending is to take a look at how the Board of Supervisors gets their support material attached to each individual agenda item.
I'm with you on that. Okay. Sorry. Just didn't understand.
And could I ask a clarifying? Did you mean that when our minutes get posted, they get posted to the website, or that we carry the link, as Steve had suggested in the earlier discussion, so that it links directly to where the minutes are already published?
Well, the link would be fine, as long as we have access through the Carson City Airport website to those minutes.
Right, and we're going to link them. Okay.
Maybe just another point of clarification to where Steve was going. Maybe I'll ask it a different way. Are we proposing to change something about the format of our agendas as we see them today that would mimic an agenda that I'm not personally very familiar with, or is this indeed just the manner in which the materials are presented on the website, just sort of how they're bundled?
Just basically how they're bundled to the website. Because our public comment recitation is different, and there's a couple other things that are different. No, I'm speaking specifically to how they get them attached to the individual items.
Thanks for the clarification. So we have a motion. It's in need of a second.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Turn that back, I think, for public comment, which I imagine there may not be any. Seeing none, that goes back to the board for further discussion. Seeing no desire for further discussion, we have a seconded motion, and we're in need of a vote. All in favor of Member White's motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, if there be any. Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. Okay, that is the end of our public hearings section of the agenda. We now move to item number G and following non-action items, starting with the airport engineer's report. Mr. Fitzgerald.
Well, we have two pending, well, actually one pending and one recently approved grant that came from the FAA. The obstruction light grant that we're trying to still move forward. Tim has got some new information today about the obstruction lights on the hills. He'd be a little bit more, he'd have more expert on that. We're just trying to get it funded through the FAA. The second one, the North Apron design grant came through the end of last week. It has been sent back to the FAA as approved, and we are got our contract signed today to begin that design. And further along in the next couple of weeks, we will be determining the utilities, places that we'll be tying into on existing pavements and so forth. We will also want to be setting up meetings with the tenants around the North Apron to discuss their thoughts on the project as well as access and phasing. So we'll be getting that scheduled here pretty soon. And once we have an idea of the timeline on that, we'll present it back to the board as well. And then our goal is to get the design completed by the end of the year so that we can go out to early bids and have hopefully a grant in place to start construction early next summer on phase one, potentially phase two, depending on how the cost structure is on that. That's all I have for you at the moment. Any questions?
Questions for the engineer?
Yeah, what's the AIP number for that one that was approved?
It's 29. Yes. They were reversed previously, and since we received the grant and it had 29 on it, we renumbered.
Well, I happened to see last year's budget had 28 on it.
Yes, that is correct. We thought it was going to be 28, and then the obstruction light was going to be 29, and the FAA had renumbered it to be as 29 for the North Apron design. So there will most likely, if the obstruction lighting is not necessary and we do not proceed further on getting a grant from the FAA, 28 most likely will not exist, and it'll just be a skipped number and continue on after 29.
Great. Thank you for that report. Good to hear that we were able to secure that. Item H, the airport manager's report, Mr. Rowe.
Regarding the obstruction lights, I sent an email out with an attachment. I did misread part of that, or miswrite part of that. The night restrictions have been removed. Someone at Oklahoma City revised the criteria slightly, and so we have no longer have night restrictions for the both GPS approaches. The circle to land approach, GPS Alpha, category C and D aircraft were added to that approach. In my email, I said it was runway 27, but that was not correct. So we still have category C and D left to discuss with runway 27 GPS, but the FAA is in the process of developing a GPS Bravo approach, which will use the initial approach fix of the runway 27. It will not be a straight-in approach, numbered approach. It will be the straight RNAV GPS Bravo approach. Higher minimums, but it will incorporate C and D category minimums, and the because the runway 27 night restrictions have been removed, this one will also have the night restrictions removed. I'm getting some verification on from the FAA Flight Procedures Office in Seattle. I will be talking to them tomorrow. I tried talking to David. They left early. I want to get a clarification on the outlook for the GPS Bravo approach. Last time I talked to Beth Houghton, who is with the flight procedures in Seattle, she intimated to me that it would be sometime in October. So I want to get some verification on that. We're looking up. Things are getting really good with regard to our approaches now, and I think we'll be able to market the airport a little better for larger aircraft.
Just to jump in and ask the question, despite the fact that it looked like on the FAA development website, there was that approach that we talked about last month that seemed to be numbered for 27, like a 27 Bravo, something like that. I assume that that is the same approach, and because it had an October, I think, go date.
That's correct. For it would surprise me that they would give us a numbered approach. I was told by Beth Houghton that it looks like it's going to be a straight RNAV GPS Bravo. But if they give us a numbered approach, that'd be a wonderful thing. So that's all good. And because of that, I would like to not pursue the obstruction lighting just yet. I think it would be a good idea to incorporate the obstruction lighting for VFR aircraft, simply because it will mark the high points in the hills. And it could be a safety issue. So that would be something I will leave up to the authority to decide on that if we had moved forward with that grant application. I wrote an email a while back regarding deer on the airport. One deer was spotted, and he's was spotted twice on two different days, but talking to other people, they haven't seen him back. And we've been making runs down the taxiway Alpha and nothing. I talked to Jack Spencer with Wildlife Services, and he told me that you can try one of two things. One, honk your horn, try to chase them off. Maybe you'll lose interest and leave, or call them and they'll come hunting. It's better to have no deer on the airport and instead of having one deer show up on the runway with an aircraft landing or taking off. So since we haven't seen him, I've been holding off calling, but if I see him, I will call Wildlife Services. It's just going to be easier to get rid of it. So having said that, we have had a good month. Things are looking up. We are changing the derelict aircraft out, moving along, and so if there's any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer.
Questions for Mr. Rowe from the board?
I would like to add just one thing real quick. The open house was a resounding success. We believe we've had somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 people. We came in pretty much close to our budget, including the money that was donated to the airport. And so we'll be bringing this to the airport authority in September to discuss next year's, if that's what the airport authority would like. And we'll start planning for that if that's approved. And we will be looking again for donations to the open house for next year. So, but we felt pretty good. We had a first time we tried to fly in, and it was very successful.
Thank you for that, Tim. And in the spirit of outstanding pledges to the Airport Authority for the open house, I understand a check is headed your way.
I didn't want to be pushy.
I know. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if I may make a statement about the open house.
Sure.
I personally went down for the first time myself this year, and it brought my entire family, my wife and my three children, and they had a wonderful time down there. They did not realize what was available at the airport, and it did open up their eyes. And they left there telling other people about the Carson City Airport and what neat things they saw and about aviation in general, and were just amazed at the number of vendors that were there showing off their wares. So I just wanted to give you all my kudos. I really appreciated how that went, and Tim, for all this hard work putting into the open house, getting it where it was. So I thank you very much for having that. as an outsider and an insider.
Thank you for those comments, and I'm glad that I'm glad that it's resounding with folks, and that you had a good time, and that the word of the airport is being spread as a result. That's great to hear. Member Williams.
Yes, not to kind of put a little bit of a damper on things, maybe this is going to come up in legal counsel's report, but regarding the open house, I received some anecdotal reports regarding a drag race that occurred during the open house. Can you tell us what happened there?
Wes Abedroth came to me and asked if he could do a race. He wanted to do it down Taxiway Alpha, which I would not allow because I thought it was too close to the crowds. He suggested the runway. I said absolutely no burning of rubber on the runway. And this was a race between his Corvette and a Tesla. And they did their running start race, and for about half of the runway, then stopped, and that was that. So, yes, it did happen.
Did it happen on the runway?
It did happen on the runway.
Okay.
Was there any sort of notaming that was done during the time that the drag race was happening on the runway?
There was a notam put on the local notam with the AWOS. We had myself, I had a radio, Steve Posick had a radio, and Wendell Paya had a radio. So we had the airport covered for communications during that period.
Any other questions?
Nope.
Are we going to get into that Corvette thing in your report or here?
I was just going to do a really short mention of it, but I guess on the NOTAM, so you didn't notify the FAA NOTAM process through the FAA contractor?
The only NOTAM that I submitted for the FAA and in the AWOS was closure of the airport during a skydiving jump with the flag during the opening ceremony. And after that, we went and closed the airport, well, just the runway, and to ensure that we had no traffic, that we maintained radio contact to allow that race to go ahead.
Oh, okay, I'm just confused by the answer. So there was a NOTAM issued regarding the parachute jump. There was no NOTAM issued via the FAA when you closed the runway to aircraft traffic and had the car race.
No, only the we only NOTAM the runway for the skydiving event, and we issued the NOTAM on the AWOS during the race, just to allow aircraft to know that there was something going on. It lasted for about 2 minutes at maximum, and so we saw no reason to issue a NOTAM for the FAA for that short of a period of time.
You understand that putting an announcement on the AWOS is not a NOTAM. That does not qualify under the FARs as a NOTAM.
I understand. It was a remark.
I think there is an important question here, and thank you, Tim, for clarifying that. It's important that we understand that with some detail, and I'll say why. You know, I know that there's sort of the practical aspects of things that the event took 2 minutes. Is there a scenario, however, with regard to the FARs, where if it's 10 seconds or it's 10 hours, the runway needed to be in the system as NOTAM'd closed during a time when it was unsafe for use by aircraft? I don't know. That's just my question is there any sort of awareness we should have about that, any concern or exposure if someone were to bring it up or get into it, or certainly awareness going forward?
There is no time limitation. If you intend to close the runway or the runway is closed because there is a damaged aircraft or some other reason, the FARs require issuance of a NOTAM, not an announcement on your AWOS, not holding handheld radios. You're required under the FARs to register a NOTAM
with the contractor for the FAA. There's kind of two issues here. One, what is the logic for closing the runway for car race? We're a public use airport. That's number one. And number two is, if you're going to do that, whether it's 2 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever it is, you certainly should be doing that safety announcement. Now, I wasn't there. I was out of town. So, I don't know what else happened there, but that's a bad practice. That is liability with a capital L for the airport. It should not occur.
Thank you for the clarification. Any other questions? Okay. Mr. Stotts.
Yeah, I think that, that Tim has the authority to close the airport if he wants to, for instance, in cases of if there's an airplane crash or something happens on the runway that would make it a wise idea to close the airport. That's not something that can go to an FAA NOTAM. It's a pretty timely kind of an event. So it seems to me that he ought to be able to close the airport. You know, he had, like I mentioned, he had three people on the radios saying that this was happening. He had it on the AWOS. So it seems to me that it was an all right thing to do. I don't see that the it could be closed as far as the official NOTAM process goes, and it was on pretty short notice too. If there's anything, you know, that probably amiss here is that there were a number of things that came up during the open house, guys that had ideas at the last minute, which would have been pretty good ideas, but they just came up at the last minute. And I see this as the same kind of a deal. I want to know, does Tim have the authority to close the airport if there is an accident or an incident or some blockage of a runway?
He definitely does. He has the authority, and pretty much anybody else can notify the FAA contractor to issue a NOTAM if the runway is closed. In fact, that's one of Tim's primary responsibilities. I have some difficulty with the last-minute nature of this. On the Friday afternoon before this event, Tim sent me an email asking whether the same gentleman, I guess, could set up a race between an aircraft and a car on the runway. And I advised him, A, it is too late for us to find out what kind of liability protection or risks we have, what our insurance coverage would cover, and what kind of safety things we have to put in place with motor vehicles that are driving at high rates of speed. And so I told him in no uncertain terms in that email response, no, you really can't do that. And that's why I'm a little frustrated here, because then we find out that he essentially did a car race anyway. Not a race against an aircraft and a car, which you know, when you go to the air races, they do that every year, but they've planned it in advance. They've taken the necessary safety steps. These great ideas that happen at the last minute have to be evaluated from a liability standpoint. If that vehicle had, one of those vehicles had collided into the other one and scattered parts into the audience or someone, we would have potentially another liability issue, like has pretty much jeopardized the Reno air races. We can't do that. We need to exercise common sense. When somebody comes up with one of their great ideas and it involves shutting down the airport to aviation to do this great idea, that should be a wake-up call to anybody who's given that proposal, that you should be looking hard and serious at that proposal, that might not be a good idea. I mean, we are an airport first. We have accepted a great deal of FAA money. We do a great job of being an airport. When there are proposals to close the airport to non-airport activities, the FAA does not look kindly on those. It jeopardizes our position with them, and it's just not a sensible thing for us to do. We're typically not insured for those kinds of things. And so, I'm venting a little bit, in part because I think that was extremely poor judgment. That's the bottom line.
Well, I think that, just to frame this up, you know, I think that, you know, there are things that I face when in our business where I have to kind of have tough conversations with employees who come in the best of intentions with really great and fun ideas and have to tell them that, you know, maybe next year, because we certainly can't do this on that short a notice, and maybe we can't do this, and it may not be readily apparent, but there are liability issues, there are questions that have to be answered, et cetera, et cetera. I can't emphasize enough that we have had a couple of things that, you know, I'm not going to comment on the, you know, appropriateness or the spirit, but the execution certainly, I think, leaves me with some concern with regard to the crossing of the T's and the dotting of the I's and the vetting of, you know, what exposure we have, again, under the FARs, under the kind of overall feeling that the FAA might get from the activity, or just from the simple liability and exposure. And so I think that we just want to be really conscientious that, you know, and this is something we can explore going forward, I think, in the appropriate way, but that when the activities for an event like that are being considered, that there's ample time for these questions to be asked and answered, reviewed, I'd say, by the authority, you know, without being heavy-handed about it, and, you know, run past, you know, the authority and the council to make sure that, you know, that we're not doing something that could really get us on the wrong side of things. And so, you know, I don't say this to spoil anybody's fun, but we do have some pretty, as Steve said, serious obligations. And God forbid somebody get hurt, and it turned out that, well, you know, it's just two guys racing cars. Well, there's a lot more complexity to it than that. So I think we gotta really sharpen up the conscientiousness around the kinds of activities that we're allowing and encouraging on our airport when it comes to, you know, these great events. You know, and I don't say this to diminish the goodness of the open house, but we gotta be smart.
That's the reason that I was decided to bring the discussion and action to the authority for next year's open house to discuss just exactly these things. There are some things that need to be discussed and what my parameters are regarding the open house.
I think that that's a very, you know, that's a good practice and a fair point. I think that the more in general that we can all be clear on the expectations, the better. That said, I think that it would be good to you know, avail yourself of any information available about exactly what those FARs regarding airport activity is. I think that's good practices. The manager and, you know, I mean, we you know, you can only hold so much at once, but, you know, making sure that, you know, if I just don't want to get into a place, you know, to Member Stott's point, I recognize that from a practicality standpoint, okay, so it's 2 minutes and these provisions were there and these provisions weren't there. I'm purely commenting on that piece from the standpoint of, did we violate federal law? Hard stop. We can't do that.
Was this something that really was a spur-of-the-moment thing, or what did it come up? Well, you said you'd contacted Steve about a plane versus a car. But so this had come up before before the event, or is it, you know, something that came up on Saturday morning?
No, the plane versus the car was a few days prior, and that's when I contacted Steve. I said, can we do something like this? I was supposed to begin with. And but, you know, I came back and told Wes that we weren't going to do that. And then he came back that morning, Saturday morning, and said, hey, I got an idea. Can we do this? I said, not on the taxiway. It's just too close to the crowds. So, but maybe we can work out a deal for the runway if you really want to do it. And so we worked it out, and we felt we did it safely, but I understand the regulations and the NOTAM procedures. So we will not do this without NOTAM. Well, I'm not going to do any more car races.
This brings also to the effect of the model airplane remote control guys. That's going to have to change. We won't do that again next year. It's a big draw for the crowds, but we will be an airport first.
I understand that there were drones operating on the airport. Is that right?
Not drones, so to speak. The drone zone from Reno was there. We had robotics going on in the Sterling hangar. The drones were operated under a canopy within a netted area. So, no, they weren't being flown around the airport.
I think what he's talking about, Tim, was the radio-controlled airplanes that were flying.
Remote-controlled airplanes were flying. They've been there every year, even from my understanding, before I took over as manager. But this is going to have to be discussed when I bring it to the authority for discussion. If this is going to go away, then it's going to go away.
Now, my question was specifically to, I had heard that there were drones operating at the airport, and there are a whole bunch of, that's another bunch of violations if, in fact, that were occurring. Now, the thing that they do under the net in a building or whatever, that's not the same thing. But if these things were flying in open, what I heard is they were flying in open airspace.
No, they weren't. We're not at the airport.
Okay.
With respect to the drone zone, I personally gave them the money to buy that net so they could do that demonstration. And that does not violate the FARs. The radio-controlled and under 55-pound unmanned aircraft should not be operated on or in an airport area. In fact, the FAA guidance is they shouldn't be flown within 5 miles of an airport. Now, I wasn't aware that they had flown those before. I've seen them on display before. I know 1 year Bob Brogan wanted to fly them, and we told him he could not. It was too dangerous. He set one up in the air anyway, and I know that the airport manager at the time, which was about three airport managers ago, had a very stern discussion with him based on the safety. I mean, it doesn't take much to collide with an airplane to cause a lot of havoc. And so it's just not a good idea, but clearly, these are the kinds of things that should be talked about before the open house, because our open houses have been successful from the standpoint that people get excited about aviation, and we haven't had any injuries. We would hate to have that change. I mean, it had such a dramatic impact on the Reno air races. You know, admittedly, the injuries there were really significant. They were horrific. But we don't want any injuries. You know, this is an event that should generate goodwill toward the airport, not be something where we have a liability.
I think that I was heading in the same direction as the question that Member Williams was with regard to someone had brought up in the community, I guess, a question. There was something out there about were there or weren't there. You know, I think we see where this went, a commingling of properly operated drones, historically, currently, questionably operated radio control airplanes. Okay. I think that the message is a good one that we review, you know, in advance all of these things so that we can be sure that we have the very, very best open house we can within the rules of the law and the safe and sane concept. And, you know, I think that that's a good place to leave that for now. So thank you very much. And we'll move on to the legal counsel's report, item I.
Okay, just a couple of quick things. One, you know, Brian talked about our current FAA AIP grant. If you want a copy, I'm happy to email it to you. We FedExed it back to the FAA last Wednesday night. Number two, Don Peterson was appointed to the Airport Authority. You know that already. He should be back in Nevada around July 21. He had planned a trip to Ecuador many months ago. And so that's the reason he's not here tonight. He was very apologetic, but he also told me there was no way he could change that trip. He was the president of a major manufacturer on the airport. He's served once on the airport before. He's extremely bright, very sensible, and he is truly independent. During his interview, I was impressed with some of the things that he said. I know him only through the fact that he'd been on the airport authority before, but he is truly an independent thinker, and I think you will enjoy having his input on the airport authority. He knows a great deal about aviation and the airport. Number three, go ahead.
Question on Don.
Yeah.
Has he been sworn in yet?
You know, somebody asked me that earlier, and I didn't know, so I don't know.
If he's not, does his election as vice chair stand?
Yeah, tonight? It still stands. I mean, okay. if for some reason he's not able to serve, then we would have to reelect to that position. The third thing I had is that we've worked for many years with NDOT's aviation group, there's a gentleman there, Matt Furedy, who's been wonderful to work with, very sharp guy, so sharp, in fact, that he has taken a teaching position at a university in the Midwest, and so he is leaving. We have met his replacement, a very pleasant and knowledgeable guy. His name is Kurt Howcool, and it's not spelled like I just pronounced it, but I think that is the way you pronounce it. It's H-A-U-K-O-H-L. But he has prior experience at the FAA, which I think should be helpful to all of us airports in the state of Nevada. He is the primary contact for all of the rural airports in Nevada, and also does the pavement inspections under contract with the FAA and a great deal of other things. And so if you see his name around or you hear about him, he's the new guy in the block. He's by no means new to aviation. I think he's older than Matt is, and he's seems like I said, a very decent guy. And the last thing I just wanted to mention is we had this problem with the Corvette organization where they believed they had a contract to use a ramp area that Tim was going to close down to aviation so they could do a pylon race on the pavement. Tim can answer any questions on that. Ultimately, we prepared a release, and they signed a release for the payment of money, return of their deposit that came from the airport, and payment of additional monies that Tim paid personally to settle this matter. Ideally, both of those items would have been brought to you first. I mean, clearly, any suggestion of closing down a ramp area to have a car race needs to come to you. And we need to work through a variety of issues, not the least of which is, how does this fit with our FAA obligations? How is this considered to be safe? What kind of safety personnel and kinds of problems do we envision could occur that we can protect against? Initially, when I notified you, it was in anticipation of litigation because they had intimated, actually, I think it was more than intimation to the chairman that we could not cancel their event. Unfortunately, had this been brought to the airport's authority back in April when Tim first started talking to them, we may have been able to vent those issues, and maybe they could even have showed up and explained some aspects of it to us. However, instead, they provided insufficient insurance binder that did not cover the Carson City Airport Authority or the city of Carson City. It was for the incorrect amount. They filled out a form, but Tim was informed, the airport manager was informed, that it would only be a couple of hours. Their application said it was going to be from 0800 to 1600, which, as you know, is 8 hours. There are just a lot of misinformation, and the whole mess was in fact, a giant mess. The fact that we are no longer in anticipation of litigation because they've signed the release means that this can all be publicly discussed. And I don't know where you guys want to take it, but it's one of those other things that should not have happened. And certainly we should all be thinking about how do we avoid this from happening again. That's all I have. Oh, and I apologize again that my briefing memo came out so late. I got stuck in the Chicago Midway Airport, where, amazingly, they are totally prepared for 250 people being stuck at the airport. They have cots, blankets, and pillows that they scatter in a giant warehouse-like room within the airport and down Gate A. And me and 250 of my closest friends were sleeping on the floor the other night. So,
one more reason not to fly commercial.
Okay. Well, thank you for that report. Mr. Takis, questions for Mr. Takis on any of these matters from the board? I guess I would turn to Manager Rowe and ask you if there's anything based on what Mr. Takis just presented to us that you'd like to comment on.
I made a mistake. It went away. It cost me money, and so I will be very careful from this moment on what I bring, what decisions I make. Many of those decisions will be made based on what you members of the authority guide me to do. I will not make arbitrary decisions like this again.
Thank you for that.
Member Stotts?
Yeah, in Tim's defense, we've asked him to help promote the airport, and he's still and also try to be creative while he's doing it. He didn't make a mistake by not letting us know that he was going to have this race and so forth. But I think his intentions were good, and I'm looking forward to hearing about any more ideas he might have before they come up, you know, in the next year or so.
I would like to respectfully disagree, because I'm the one that spent the entire July 4th weekend on the phone with the Corvette people, and it was not pleasant, and it shouldn't have ever gotten there. It was not a good idea. The liability was staggering. And the other issue was, while it might have been a fun idea, the amount of money we were getting was $500. The cost for Tim and Gary in overtime payment would have exceeded that. And the fact that we had to close the ramps, I think it was a very serious mistake. I don't think it's anything that we can gloss over lightly. This is two in a week that are – these are serious mistakes. We can't have this kind of stuff. And I'm really concerned about it.
Well, I think we all agree that it was a mistake for him to do that, but we have been encouraging him to get this airport more publicity, and it's true. I mean, I don't argue with the fact that it's a mistake. It would have, there's a number of things wrong, like it would have torn up our new pavement. That's not a good thing, and of course there's always the liability issues, and you know it's true. It's not enough money, but. I think Tim's been up to his ears in this open house, and he did a damn good job on it. And I think, you know, maybe he was distracted. Maybe his judgment failed a little bit when he did this one. Now, like I say, I agree that this thing shouldn't have happened, and it's unfortunate you had to spend your weekend dealing with these people. I imagine they probably were unpleasant about having their whole thing canceled. I can see why they would be. But anyway, the point is, I think Tim was trying to do something good and just basically screwed the pooch on this one.
Okay. Member Williams, do you have...
I'll leave it.
Well, I was involved in part of those phone calls as well, and, you know, I don't, you know, I really don't want to go on and on, but... you know, I think that, well, I'm just going to say that I think we want to be conscientious that in the spirit of building friends of the airport and publicizing the airport, it's unfortunate that this little event, which is not a little event, this is the 50th anniversary of the Western States Corvette Association, that they published to their membership as a highlight feature event during their itinerary, needed to be canceled and moved. And it sucks to be part of the team that had to break that news to them. Okay? And so we should not have been here in the first place. And I do feel it's appropriate to mention that it just was a bad sequence of events. And I'm not going to go further than that. But I think the point's been made. So we'll go forward from here and understand that we're going to do a better job of evaluating these things in the future. We will move on to the treasurer's report. Mr. Posick.
Okay. At the end of June, which is also the end of the fiscal year, total checking and savings came up to $474,865.11. With other assets incoming, total assets are $765,358.71. We have reserves left from last year because we didn't spend money on the lights, the apron design. The only thing that we have taking out of last year's money, and I don't know if it'll go to this year's budget, the reserve is $154,612.57. That's it.
Thank you for that, Mr. Posick. A question that I think is maybe it could be an additional item, but I think this is a good place for it. Our company, ClickBond, is the contractor of record for the airport waterline construction, which, as I think I reported last time, is now complete. We've actually just received the final billing for that from the contractor who did the work. I just wanted to inquire as to what is the proper process for submitting that invoice to the airport authority. Do I bring that to you, Mr. O?
Send it to me, and I will write the check and have the new treasurer, Member White, co-sign it.
Great. And so that should be that we'll do that next week. So you can expect that, and we'll get that matter closed. Item K, report from authority members. Are there any members who have information or items of interest? Hearing none, we move to our second period for public comment. Is there a member of the public who would like to address the Airport Authority? You can speak on items discussed on the agenda related to the airport. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person or topic. And if your item requires extended discussion, you can discuss calendaring the matter for a future Airport Authority meeting. Welcome. And please state your name for the record.
Dee Freebert.
That's loud. Good to see you, Dee.
Hi. I'm up here representing Carson Aviation Academy. I have just an advisory for the board. Carson Aviation Academy has entered into a teaching partnership with Charter College, and we will be offering an associate's degree program, and we will be the flight partner for Charter College. And so we're advancing and promoting the airport. It is not an exclusive arrangement, so we hope to build more partnerships with other teaching institutions. Along with that, I have a question. In the spirit of promoting aviation education, Charter College wishes to establish a kiosk internet capability to talk to the professors that they have remotely from our airport. And I would like to propose to install it in the terminal building. It will be available for the public to view, get out to the world and so forth to do research, access other aviation sites perhaps, and it'll be hopefully, with your approval, installed near the simulators that are already in the terminal building. And I wanted to ask specifically if we need to put an agenda item on the next board meeting to evaluate that process.
Well, first off, Congratulations.
Thank you.
And that's exciting to hear that you're finding success in bringing programs like this to the airport. I just was curious quickly, what is the actual associate's degree in? What are they calling it?
It's their fixed wing program,
uh-huh.
And it's a two-year degree program. Our portion is to provide the flight instruction from zero to CFI.
Gotcha. Very cool. So with regard to the, and this would be a kiosk that's an internet access terminal, basically a public internet terminal branded with their information and probably loads the homepage of the school?
As a default, okay. But you can go elsewhere.
So first off, yes, consideration of that needs to be an agendized item, which we can do. Now, I think everybody who's been part of this authority for a while knows the saga of internet connectivity at the terminal building, and no one more than Mr. Rowe. I think there's some technical questions that we will have to get to, but if the appropriate thing would be, would we need to discuss that as an agendized item, or is it really kind of letting the terminal building be used for something?
I don't know enough about it to really fairly answer the question. I am as excited as you are. This is wonderful, the program that you're doing, and I can't imagine that there would be any objection to doing the kiosk. However, what we are talking about is allowing use of an area that's not currently leased any place, and so it's probably the safest approach is to put it on the agenda, figure out what it is you want to do, and then get permission to do it.
Okay.
And I mentioned the word lease. I don't mean to imply that you'd have to pay any money to use that area space. You can discuss that with Mr. Rowe, but I think something like that stands on its own 2 feet in terms of value to the airport.
And if I may address Member Hutter, there is acknowledged technical difficulty in that building, as well as the configuration of the building, but I think we can work around all of those matters. There's a new hotspot type of technology that we can possibly use. And the expense, which is, of course, a concern for the authority, will be absolutely absorbed by Charter College for any additional services that are required. What we are essentially asking for is a piece of real estate where we can affix two monitors and a keyboard and something this size of an old-fashioned modem. And we have the furnishings to do that, which are already there.
Great. I think then the thing that I would do is if we could please have the item added to the agenda, and if you would, Ms. Freeward, speak with Mr. Rowe about kind of the details and what we would need to know about so we could be prepared to discuss that. That'd be great.
Great. And we'll prepare that. I also have a second comment. I was a participant, a parent, a supporter, an active organizer with the committee that put the open house together. And I also want to send my congratulations to Tim for putting on a very well-done program year after year. We skipped last year, and so this year was another build-up for that. I also want to advise that, you know, as an educator, when you start removing those things that are a bit hazardous, you take away a real ideal teaching instrument for the kids. I focus on the kids. They get excited about RC aircraft. They get to see it in smaller scale, so their appreciation of it will grow as they grow. And I just want to caution that if you throw away that broad category of teaching tools for the kids, you're going to eliminate one of the audiences that Tim, as well as the entire committee, have been trying to nurture in this community. So please give that a lot of thought. The event is a special circumstance. It's a special day. If we can put an envelope, a window around some of the special things that we bring to the airport for that day and add the other safety precautions, I think we can still offer a great experience for the community.
Thank Thank you very much for bringing that up. And you have my assurance as someone who's also very dedicated to aviation and STEM education. I read you loud and clear, and we, you know, you've got my pledge that we will do everything we can to be planful and responsible to have the very best and most engaging and exciting experience that we can, you know, again, within the rules and the laws and responsibility. So, no, thanks for mentioning that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public? Seeing none, a review of agenda items for the next regular meeting. We just got one. I would ask if there's anything regarding the tower activity, cricket, et cetera, that might be on there for sure.
There might be two items. One item is Clearwire is we're still trying to find out what changes they're making. It may not require authority action. They have notified the airport that they want to change out some of the electronics on their position on the tower. As long as there isn't a structural problem and they stay within the same area they're in right now, that's something that their lease allows them to do, so there would be no need to bring that back to you. If there's a structural issue, then it becomes more complicated. The other one is Cricket, who has given us notification, although they haven't really done it the way they're supposed to do it under the lease, but they've given notification that they plan to leave the tower. Tim just received, I think today, and forwarded to me the letter of authorization from Cricket, actually saying that the contractor who's been talking to us is authorized to act on behalf of Cricket. Item, Tim has notified them that it would take airport authority action to decide how we're going to go about that termination. And by that, I mean Cricket has offered to either follow the terms of the lease and remove all of its equipment, its power, its pads to 2 feet down into the earth and everything and restore it to the way it was before Cricket came. Or they've offered to pay us $5,000 and they will just take their antennas off the pole but leave the power lines in and the pads in. Or give us $10,000 and just leave it all. I'm assuming they would still take some of the electronics because some of that electronics has use elsewhere. But for the most part, they wouldn't remove the support structures that are on the tower for their equipment. And so that is a decision that you will need to make. And so that needs to be on the next month's agenda. We have asked, Tim has asked them in his email whether that will work with their time schedule because they included a comment about if we don't hear anything from you, we're going to just assume we have to do a total demolition. And so I think Tim did the right thing there in sending them a communication saying, hey, give us a little bit of time to respond. Our authority needs to make that decision. And so we'll see what they have to say. But candidly, the lease says they're supposed to give us written notification of termination. And until we got their authorization letter, we didn't even know exactly who we were dealing with. We're dealing with someone who claims to be acting on behalf of Cricket, who's not Cricket. And we've run into that before where we've had people who've come to us claiming to be operating on behalf of AT&T or other major carriers, and it turns out they're not really. They're really out there trying to hawk a good deal that they can go turn around and go back to AT&T and say, hey, look, we can get you this better deal here we've negotiated. So these guys are real now, but they're supposed to give us written notification, 60-day written advance notification of termination of the lease, and then under the terms of the lease, they have another 120 days after that to actually remove their equipment. My thinking is we're going to probably take one of the options that gives us money, because we certainly, I don't know there's any value in tearing out the pads and the electrical and that kind of stuff. I think that actually has value to us. What we don't know is the $10,000 versus the $5,000 option. Because, you know, we aren't communications engineers. It's not like we can go up and remove some of the stuff ourselves.
Well, without... without prejudging, you know, this, the gut feel is, you know, get their antennas off the tower and leave the infrastructure. But that's something that we're going to have to decide. And it sounds like the time frame works, so we'll have that agendized. And, yeah, thank you. I've seen the emails on that. And, you know, that's great that we got those options under discussion. So that'll be on the agenda. Are there any other agenda items that you guys may have in mind that aren't on the radar? Member White.
Just that laundry list of items that I had submitted for this month, but with this long agenda now at nearly 9:30, I agreed to put them off until next month.
Those items have already been put on the tentative agenda for next month.
Okay.
Yep. No, we good to confirm that those are captured.
And there's one other item which we continued from this month, which was there were two actions that were taken in which Lee Griffin was either a moving party or the second on a motion. And just to clean up our record, I'd like to bring both of those back for you to just confirm the action of the authority. Neither one was an earth-shaking thing, but it's just, it's bothersome to me that there would be any kind of infirmity in our action. And that, of course, was driven by the fact that Lee was no longer working for his, he no longer met his qualifications to be on the authority, and he was still acting. It was innocent. Again, it was innocent motive. It's just that still not right.
That has also been added to the tentative agenda for next month.
Thank you, Tim. And the only other one I can think of is, would we maybe expect some further conversation and possible action on the Kupal hangar concept?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll be ready for that in some fashion or another. It sounds like that's all getting reimagined.
What the holdup has been so far was the lot line adjustment with the city planning. Brian has been in discussion with them, and they are assuring us that they will probably have the lot line adjustment completed and approved by, I think you said, next week?
Yeah, one of our major hurdles has been overcome yesterday, and it should be just a final verification of one clarified item. We should be able to submit all the final documents, most likely by the end of next week.
And then with that, the agenda item that will be placed on next month's agenda would be to consider approving, moving forward with the appraisal for the old airport structures lease, and then the rest is up to you guys.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to that. All right, well, it's been a long one. We did a lot. And maybe it's time to think about going home for the night. So do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. And all in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
We are adjourned.